Welcome, everyone. We have a forum, so let's start the meeting. It is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee today, July 13th. And I am joined at the table by Vice Chair of the Committee, Susan Albright, Councilor from Ward 2, Councilor Laredo from Ward 7, Councilor Gentile from Ward 4, and Councilor Lappin from Ward 8. I'm Deb Crossley, Councilor from Ward 5, and we are joined by our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We have, papers are all upside down. We have about six public facility grants and locations with our public hearings this evening, and then we are going to be discussing the proposed complete street policy for the City of Newton with the Department of Public Works. I just want to say at the beginning of the meeting that we are not going to be, I'll read the item into the record and I'll tell the story later on, but we're not going to be taking up the modulars tonight that where they're requesting a waiver for modulars of service and south. So if anybody is here in particular for that item, you might not want to stick around. Okay, so to begin, we have item number 221-16, which is an Eversource petition for grant of location to install conduit in Court Street, west of Beach Street, which is to provide service to 77 Court Street, that is in Ward 2. And we are joined by...
Good evening, my name is Marnie Shell, and I'm here on behalf of the Eversource Company, and I'm here on a petition for Court Street. It's considered from pole 53 west, then approximately 68 feet west of Beach Street, distance of about 30 feet of conduit. This is to provide electric service to a new 36 residential development at 77 Court Street.
Okay, thanks very much. Any comments from the committee?
So, there's a pole there now. Is there a pole there now?
There's an existing pole, so we're customer's going to put conduit from the pole to the property line.
So there's only pole that will be replaced, or is there one pole, just one pole?
There's a pole, but it's not the only place. All the existing poles are going to stay the same. It's
really?
Just a piece of conduit. Yeah.
So since it's a 40B, we have no control over having asking them to underground. Maybe we would have with a special permit.
After they are underground, it's their service. But it's not going to be removing a pole.
Oh, because why?
They're going to run a pipe. Customs contract will run a pipe from the pole to the property line, put a cable inside the conduit. We make the connection at the pole.
So with the electricity...
It's an underground service.
So, just so I'm clear, the current pole services other households?
Correct.
Which is why you can't eliminate the pole?
Correct.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question of DPW?
Sure.
Are you then going to be, who's going to be following up to make sure that they fill in the street properly after they're done?
So the permits will come through engineering sections as long as they get a signal green permit, and one of our inspectors will be out there to make sure that they've done everything that they've actually
done. And done it properly. Because I've just heard some complaints. I'll deal with offline.
Give me an email and tell me after this.
Sure,
we'll ask you.
Sure. Come on, sir. Thank you.
Sure. I have a question. Does anyone else have a question?
Okay.
My understanding that a simple service connection normally does not require a grant of location. Does this require a grant of location? Maybe I'd ask this of Mr. Dagland because it's an underground service?
Yeah, because it doesn't need a grant because it's going horizontally parallel to the road. If it was just a lateral going from the pole directly to the property line, it would be turned up by the commissioner.
Okay. Thank you. If there are no further comments from the committee, I'll ask, is there anyone here from the public who wishes to speak for or against or questions?
Really more a request.
Could you
take
your name and address
for the record? Bob Cavanaugh, you see on Gold Street, and you're direct butter to where the work is going to be done. Our request is that since February, we have had construction vehicles starting at 7 o'clock in the morning. They end at 3. We request that Eversource, any work they have done, can't fall outside of those hours. It's, as I said, bad enough that 8 hours every day in February. Today is a perfect example. We had two from the diesel vehicle. So we request that be put into the work order or whatever we can hold, that they can only work within the hours that work is being done on site. We're not suggesting even more. Second thing we request, although I think it's already not supposed to happen, it does happen, is that vehicles not be allowed to idle.
I believe
it's not allowed anyway, but
it's a state law.
But it happens. And I think the goal one time we had an issue with a tractor trailer we had it hiding in front of the house. I tried to call him just by the time I got there. The guy was gone. So again, it had been written into the order where this will be called. That the men will be told, or will be told, that no idling and only between certain hours. Realize this work has to be done, but as I said, the entire block is going through this.
So what happens, the customer contractor that's going to be putting the conduit in, they're going to go to the city, they're going to get an excavation permit, street opening, the hours are written there, all the stipulations. Eversource, once that's called in, that's all done. The tire truck will come out. We're just making the connection at the top of the pole.
Okay.
So we're not actually doing
anything. I don't know that there's normal construction hours in the city during the week begin at 7 o'clock, but normal construction hours extend beyond 3 o'clock. Okay. John, can you read it for?
Well, thank goodness we have union labor there. I'm very thankful for that. Mm-hmm. And they put in their 8 hours. Now, I'm saying that it has gone over, and I've understood that before in concrete. But as a general rule, 90% of the time, 95% of the time, 3 o'clock, we can go out on our porch.
I hear you, sir. What I'm trying to get at is I'm not sure that there's any conditions built into the order that the Zoning Board of Appeals would have issued for this project that control the hours. And so, if the contractor decides to work part of the second shift, I don't know that we have any control over that. And I think as you just heard the lovely one from the report say, this work is going to be done by the principal contractor except for the connection at the pole. But if Mr. Dagling could help me any further with that, am I incorrect on any matter?
If I'm not mistaken, the city ordinance states 7 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yes.
And everything after 5 o'clock needs approval by the police.
I understand that. Susan?
Don't you have any control over the contractor?
So that once this gets approved, we let the customer know, look into the city, get the permit, the hours will be on it from the city, but the stipulations are. Once you get the inspected house, they call in Eversource saying it's okay, it was inspected. Our truck comes out and needs to change the connection at the pole.
So, Chris, you're saying that the city writes the hours on the. Can you stipulate that we want a 7 to 3? We can do that, can't we?
Yes.
We can do that for the primary contractor, for just the particular job. Okay? Okay, Nadia, do we have that? Okay, is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item?
What street is this one?
Court Street. Okay. Anyone else here?
So, just a question. So if that's up to three, but we don't have Verizon's up to three.
Eversource.
So what would happen, we're not going to be out
there. I understand the process, but when you go out there, theoretically, they could be out there after three. But
normally on normal work days, a truck would be out between 9 and 3.
We'll add that condition into the order. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any more comments, Susan?
No, I'll let you know.
Okay. We have a motion to approve from staff for all
with conditions.
With conditions. All in favor? Unanimous? Thank you.
Thank you.
And we've been joined by Councillor Danberg from Ward 6. On to the next item is 249-15. Celco Partnership, DBA Verizon Wireless System for Ground Location to attach wireless communication equipment to existing utility poles in Ward 8 at two locations, one on Dudley Road, one on City Road. And we are joined by a Chinese Mason. Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you for having to potential presentation for the double poll on Monday night.
Yes.
Appreciate that very much.
You're
welcome. Here this evening, Elizabeth Mason, from Penn Middleton, attorney representing Verizon Wireless for two new proposed small cell installations. And we have plans for each, but essentially, one to go on a 30 pole adjacent to 530 Dudley Road, and the other to go on a utility pole adjacent to 16 Hayes Road, both in basically the southern area. These are being proposed for the same reasons as the 10 other small cell installations that we've brought before you, both to address inadequate capacity in those areas, but more importantly for these particular sites to offload some of the data demand that is being drawn on the macro sites in the area, the large sites. These are in areas where the big sites are basically being very heavily used, and it's a sort of extra support so that Verizon can sort of spread the wealth of the coverage between the macro site and the smaller site. And I have Vanessa Frankel from Structure Consulting Group. I don't know if you want to add to that or perhaps refine a point on it because it looks very particularly well.
Well, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Matt Frankel.
Okay.
Along with that, just the idea to help offload certain sectors of macro sites, developers, that Brian Garza here is concerning.
Thank you very much for coming in and for commenting.
It's helpful to have the photographs of the poles themselves, but it would be even more helpful if we could see a photograph of perhaps one that you've already installed, so that we could see what it looks like, what we're talking about. I mean, the diagrams are one thing, but if we've got, if you have you installed any of these around the city?
Newton, I don't think yet. We've gotten the kind of thing for you originally.
I'm sure this isn't the last one that you'll install. Especially if there are people, members of the public, that might want to see what one of these things looks like. Do you have a picture of one on a that you can pull out?
Yeah.
And Stelco is DBA Verizon. There's a hole now, and I mean, there's a you drop down with coverage in this area, and so you're attempting to increase your coverage for Verizon cell phones in this area.
Yeah, it's mostly addressing any traditional capacity in that area, but also, as Max explained, the big tower sites typically have three sectors. There are four that are sort of beam out the ARF waves, the data transitions, and sometimes a sector will get overburdened by the amount of voice and data services that are being used by the Verizon customers on the ground. So this sort of enables a shift to that small cell when it's needed.
How many feet out does this coverage reach?
The small cells are as this name suggests, pretty limited in scope. I mean, I'm not an ARF engineer, but I know that typically they're deployed in areas like malls, stadiums, no more than 500 feet, a much lower power than the macro sites, the tower sites. The signal is sufficient to be useful, but weak enough that it's going to be dissipated pretty quickly by a wall of a building or even leafy cover on a tree, if they do that sound. But
Do you have a better way than, let's say, anecdotally, to know where in the city you don't have coverage? I drop my calls on Beacon Street going by Cold Spring Park all the time.
Yes.
But I don't have Verizon. So you know where in the city.
Absolutely. In fact, Verizon and I believe other carriers, if they're saying, does this in an anecdotal way. Everybody has their dropped call carriers. You know, I live out west, so I take the price to the spot where I know do not be on the phone to do the show. The RF engineering group at Verizon, as with the other carriers, has a tremendous amount of data coming through all the time with user data and computer modeling programs, so they know where coverage is either, they know where they're dropped off, they actually have numbers to show that.
Covering,
okay,
you know, it's provided if you're not going to get good cell coverage.
Yes, do you have a picture that you could show?
I think what you're asking is literally like,
what does it look like?
Yeah, I know. The last time you came to see us was at 10.
We were
here a couple of times. You had pictures of the poles with renderings or Photoshop devices on them. So I think we are seeing them. Are they any different?
No, these are,
what are the dimensions again? These are the ones that are actually 3 feet by about a foot.
Right.
I remember you telling us the Photoshop.
Unfortunately, it depends on which engineering contractor we're using to do the drawing. The drawing has actually had the schematic overlaid on the picture of the pole, which is great.
Yeah.
I may in my file, but I don't believe I do have pictures of installations that have been completed in other towns.
Yeah,
we're not going to pull this up because you have a picture. It would just help us to
send that in.
I'm good.
Okay.
So I probably should have asked this the last time, but I was under the impression that due to some Telecommunications Act, that equipment like this didn't come to the city council, that there was a different administrative process that I believe was handled in planning. So, can anybody help me out?
Well, there is something about that. Let's see if I can open it up. Because it's, but that's when we're, I think that when we're putting these towers on city property, that doesn't come to us anymore.
It's not just city property, because I asked because I have had a T-Mobile tower on my building for close to 10 years. And initially, they never came to the committee.
Didn't go to land use.
I was told that there was a administrative site plan review. It was handled by somebody in planning. And the other thing is, the reason that I'm asking now is, periodically they'll come back to do some work. Well, recently they called me, and they said they needed to replace the antenna. Well, 10 days later, they're still up there working, and not only have they replaced the antenna, they've added two antenna, and they have put a lot of cabling and everything else, and they never came to this committee.
I can explain, I think, what's going on there, just based on sort of a general, based on what you said, and just the way the law is laid out these days. The reason these particular proposed installations are before this committee and the city council is because they are located on utility poles within public rights of way. So we have to go for a grant of location from the city council through your committee. Zoning district is not, I mean, the judicial court has held, not so clearly, but clearly enough, that zoning doesn't apply within public rights of way. So if any of these poles were to be on private property, we would be going probably before, I don't think we'd go over the land use, we just go straight to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Under the zoning bylaw. I think the city council wouldn't be the body that would hear the, in essence, we'd be going for a special permit under the zoning code. And the zoning code bylaw ordinance. I have it in my bag, I don't remember.
So what if it's on a private building?
If it's on a private building, that is, so that there's two things going on there. That would be, in Newton, a special permit under the zoning code. However, if you've got an existing facility that's already received a special permit, it's up and running, and you either want to swap out antennas or add to that facility, it's considered an existing base station, in which case there has been a fairly recent change going on with the 2012, the Spectrum Act, which says where you've got an existing facility, we want to, kind of said, you know, localities are holding up the rollout of wireless across the nation. Let's speed this along.
Right.
So if there's an existing facility or antennas in place, basically you get to go under Section 6409 review.
They were able to do administrative from the get-go. They never had to go for a special permit, and I was told that it was handled in planning. Do you know any Johnson?
Sure. Yes, that's odd. That may be the
city's
property.
Not on mine. Well, it's probably predated that.
Okay.
So 500 feet. So there must be like three or four houses that aren't. I mean, what is the point of it?
As Matt said, and as I didn't explain as well, it is to provide the ability to offload excess demand on the macro set of the big structure so that everybody then is using that tower site for transmission of their calls or their data has opportunity to get coverage, basically.
They were supposed to be, they wanted to put a tower on Country Club Road a few years ago. And because you needed a huge building to go with it, I'm not sure if this was, I think it was a cell tower.
So, I'm familiar with it, but
you had to have a certain square footage, so it was 300 square feet of a building, and we ended up saying no. Is this because that doesn't exist?
Likely not, and I don't know if that was Verizon's proposal or not. This is Verizon's best prediction based on all of that.
Okay.
All of the numbers and the computer modeling to pick up coverage.
Okay.
coverage and capacity in that area.
We still don't have concerns about electromagnetic waves.
That's a whole different
ballgame. What do you think the way I am? I'm right underneath
your
towel.
See, now we know why.
So you didn't raise that point last time. Is
I know.
For anybody who's in the room.
Yeah. I know. They said it's supposed to be less harmful than the AM radio to go along. I still have a question about that. But have all the neighbors have been notified?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They're going to go there and they're going to see, somebody's going to see this 3x1. How high up are they on the pole?
The Dudley Road situation will be at the side of the pole.
So here it is. Like, would it be up there or would it be?
Well, actually, I can show you the diagram. 28 feet. Yeah.
So if I could tell what 28 feet is on the picture.
Right. And actually, that pole, Eversource is committed to replace. Okay, on that one, it's sitting on the top of that pole.
The top? Okay.
Yeah. So the pole itself is sitting, it has to be high, and the antenna one is 3 feet on top of that.
So it'll make the pole higher.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, what about the other one?
The other one, the pole is going to be replaced, I believe. By Eversource on the Dudley Road pole.
Okay.
The Dudley Road is being replaced?
Yes.
The Dudley Road pole is being replaced. The replacement pole is going to be 39 feet tall, but the antenna is going to be mounted at 20.5 feet.
And what's the current one?
The current one,
is it say?
That's
wonderful.
34. That's
28. Okay. Yeah. Question on you.
Okay. And I have Mark, and then do you want to open the public hearing?
As far as Lenny's suggestion, why don't we get the law department just to advise us if there's a legal question about it? John's right, and it's done fine.
Okay.
Fine.
I just think it's a different circumstance.
Fine.
Yeah. Thank you. And maybe there's something else before I open the public.
Yeah, just a quick question. How tall is the existing pole that is now going to be replaced with a 39-foot pole?
I believe you said 34.
So send it, it'll go up another 5 feet. In other places, I've seen replacement of poles, and they replace the whole line of poles, the whole streetful of poles, so that the poles are the same, you don't have one that's 5 feet taller than the other. Are you planning on replacing all poles on that street, or are you just going to have one pole that's 5 feet taller than the other, and what good does that do?
I think there's going to be refundable. Eversource makes a call when they do joint losses for our telephone and went up. So they decided that we be able to pull them off to replace it, and we asked to raise it 5 feet so we can increase coverage as well.
And so this one pole will be 5 feet taller than all the other poles, and the good thing that will come out of that is that you can put a cell that's higher on this pole.
It's only going to go at 28 feet. Okay.
So if it's going up 28 feet, what are you using the other 5 feet for?
So, Eversource doesn't allow us to have antennas above the secondary wires. So, every flight is increasing, pulled up 5 feet, all the primary and secondary wires are increased, and moving up the center line increased by 5 feet.
Okay.
So, it really would have been at 23 feet.
Okay, so there's no plan to increase all the poles on the street and make them all the same size? No.
Okay. Yeah, and that would be Eversource's and driving telephone plans.
So actually, before I compile this here, given that this is not your pole, but you're replacing the pole, there's a lot of other stuff on that pole. We're not going to wind up with a double pole situation.
You're not replacing the pole, right? Yeah, I mean, Eversource is replacing the pole, so, and I see exactly where you're going and understand
that comes to concerns.
No,
but the double pole, they just have to get everything in line to move the wires, which is not easy.
So, this kind of thing could put us into a bind. And
we,
no,
we could condition it that there is not, there'll be not this.
You can't install your device until the second pole is removed. Right, and the old pole is completely removed.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to do this. Yes, agreed. So,
just try not to create more.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to open the public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak on this matter? Your full name, please.
My name is Eric Dong. I live at 5357 Road in Newton. Mm-hmm. We're potentially kayaking across the street from where the poles are.
Okay.
I've been working in telecom for a long time, fiber optics and what have you. Okay. The lady was mentioned about what's the study on the RF dangers and all that stuff. There is some dangers. Based on who sponsored what user, you didn't get the right answer.
But there are many opinions out there, I agree.
And so on and so on. This thing is far more crazy than your cell phone in your ear, than in your ear. And I really oppose that. And the fact is that there's a brand new house that's going to be going up there, and they're subjected to something like that too, but they definitely have a safety. Okay. And my neighbor here too, that will also talk about that problem. But there's definitely an issue here that I'm supposed to see. I have my neighbor also wrote a letter because he cannot come to the meeting. I hope you would out there. There's a lot of companies involved. You've also someone mentioned about the covers, the fact, you know, trees can dissipate the signal and all that stuff. The trees there are like 30 feet, maybe even higher. Okay? And the poles that you mentioned are 39. So there could be a few there too. I don't really know how much gain you get from that equipment there as a foot, basically, off the ordinary set. And why not put on Baldwin Road, hopping one eye from the moon, better cover. You see what I'm saying? And on the street, there's so many trees, okay? And fig trees. And I don't really see the need for it. That's my there's some things I forgot to write down because I got my pen that people were talking about. I remember I might come up again with something else. Yeah.
You have letters you would like to submit for the record?
Yes, it is one. And besides me and this meeting.
Okay.
That's my neighbor at 533. Okay.
At 530?
533.
Oh. It's 530. 530 W Road. Which is across the street from this.
Oh, 530 is where it turns, where the transmission is going to be.
I'm going to take the rest of the public comment, and then actually, I'd like to hear from you about the constraints that we work within under the FCC regulations or whatever. So.
My name is Steve Riley, and I live at 28 Woodbine Terrace in Newton. But my client, the couple that is building the home at 530 W Road, they live in Nebraska and they could be at this meeting. They asked me to represent them for their concern. And just going back to the health issues that were brought up earlier, it's an older couple. He has a pacemaker, she has a hearing aid. And they're very concerned that the RF frequencies that are going to be going to this are going to affect their ability to enjoy the new home that they're just about to build. Some of the other questions were, I'd really like to know what the equipment looks like. And being very familiar with the site, it is kind of low, and there are higher areas around. And I don't know enough about the science as to why, that was maybe just a coverage thing. It seems like there's some higher ground right behind the wheel that might work better. And that's really all I have to say.
The petitioner's representative speak to what the rules are from your point of view, and as well, I know we touched on it earlier, but for the gentleman, could you speak to the relative safety of the ratings for the frequencies?
Absolutely. Excuse me, take that issue last. The first issue that you mentioned as well is that this is not the highest possible point in the area, therefore couldn't possibly serve Verizon's needs. Verizon's RF engineers have determined that this location at this height serves its needs. They've made that determination based on the data they've collected from the backhoe sites in the area, and this location does work for them. Small cell installations in particular are designed to be lower than the macro sites, which are typically, you know, anywhere from 90 to 150 feet. And some of the really older towers, they actually are as high as 200 feet. But these lower power, providing, as we said, that switching function, and that's just the way it works. The height is not an obstacle. They're not trying to cover the broad expanse that a typical macro site is trying to cover. So that we're not at either a higher elevation or on a, you know, a 50-foot pole at the very top of that is not a technical concern for Verizon. This will serve the purpose that they're designing to serve. In terms of aesthetics, and I don't know if you've seen the plans that we submitted, but essentially Verizon has designed these to be stealth installations, by which I mean they are, you know, it's a 1 foot by 3 foot antenna. The antenna is actually encased or enclosed in a container that looks like a transformer, a typical transformer. So it's essentially not going to be any different from anything that you see on any or every other pole in the neighborhood. There's also the equipment boxes. Those are no more than a foot by 2 feet. If you look at the poles in your neighborhood or anywhere else. I mean, I think I've bored you with this before, but I did not really start looking at poles until I started doing these kinds of sites, and it's astounding how much stuff there is on poles. So this is not going to be anything other than what you typically see from any other utility provider in any other part of the city. With regard to getting to health issues now, with regard to potential interference with pacemakers and other things, every wireless carrier is required by law and by FCC guidelines to not cause any interference with anything. So there
any what?
Interference with
who is not testing?
The FCC says, well, Congress said, you know, the FCC has implemented new regulations repeating that a wireless carrier cannot its radio frequency emissions cannot cause any interference with anything operating on any other band.
The AM is allowed to.
Honestly, I don't know that. I know that for Verizon Wireless, for example, that they're operating at 700 band, we're only operating in that band of spectrum. So we're not going to interfere with pacemakers or things that are not in that band. Technically speaking, technologically speaking, but then legally we cannot. So, but to get to the broader issue of potential human health effects from radio frequency emissions, I know that you stated, and correctly so, that there are a lot of different opinions out there about whether cell phones, cell towers, electromagnetic pulses from high power transmission lines, whether those cause cancer or any other number of effects. The FCC, again, has determined that, let me back up. The FCC has established what it calls maximum permissible exposure levels above which the radio frequency emissions cannot go. And the macro sites that Verizon builds, the MPE levels emitted So the radio frequency that is emitted by those big tower sites is at about 1% of, if you look at this most visible level as it's 100, it's at 1%. This is much lower power, and exponentially that much below the maximum physical exposure levels allowed by the FCC. And the FCC divides it up into occupational exposures and general exposures, occupational exposures within the equipment compound and outside the equipment compound, and they divvy it up into general exposure. You know, it's obviously the one I'm most concerned to use here, and it's not the good fact. That said, further, Congress has said in the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996 that local boards are not allowed to consider potential human health effects of radio frequency emissions in making decisions.
Not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, that's Congress saying it, which is, that was a decision that Congress made, and the Supreme Court has said that's okay.
All set?
Yeah.
So
can I allow the public
to
follow up, sir?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that you spoke about Congress thinking that the law saying that the public cannot use that as a criteria for changing the government. I have issues with Congress. I'm sorry, the Cooper passing a lot of stuff creates a lot of issues, right? And as I say from the beginning, it's basically who sponsors the state, who sponsors the leadership, okay? Now, get to us, that's the answer they want, okay? And I kind of, hearing what Congress has to say, I'm kind of, what can I do about it, Nothing. But, it's all about to, putting the power fire or whatever. For me, it's for simple purpose. You have a receiver that will check the signal to see how well it will receive the signal sensitive, and that's what they're doing. It's basically, we can supply the need from this site because I have a little meter here, It's basically how close you need to the box. That's what I'm concerned about. And that's really what I'm talking about, my neighbors, okay, and my friends. Way across the street from us. And a new house being built, 30 feet away from it, 30 feet away. Yeah, That's why I'm home.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Hi. I'm Stanley, and Daniel, and my wife, 522 W Road. Stephen Lively is architect for my parents who bought the house at 530 W Road. So this is the stretch of the road we are keenly interested in. I just have a couple of comments. My greatest opposition to this is that the precedent being set here is that a telephone pole is getting turned into a radio tower. By virtue of turning it into a radio tower, you're creating an existing base station. Once you create this condition, you don't uncreate it. So one of the things Danielle and I have said to newcomers to Newton, what we really, we had on our kind of roadmap for this beautiful neighborhood, it would be really nice if these tables were underground. Broadcasting RF going to the neighborhood. So, I will take exception to the whole idea that this is a fill-in tower for the local residents. I'm not a Verizon wireless customer. You're not either?
Okay.
So, and if it's 500 feet, so we're talking about cut-through traffic driving down W Road. Frankly, if the call drops because of all the cut-through traffic, that's a public good, is what I'm saying. It's a narrow road, and in rush hour, the GPS is telling everybody, hey, go down that road, get off of Route 9. So I don't really see this as a positive for our neighborhood. And, notwithstanding the points that were made about this region out on RF and, how much coverage this is, we know the second day is increasing income taxes, and what I see from Verizon and all the other carriers is to create demand for more and more data-rich streaming services that require more and more antennas. And so you've got the whole fulfillment process. You talk to you of infinite expansion of, oh, geez, the line supply, because people are watching the World Cup on their iPhone, and there's not enough, so we can get antennas on every corner.
I think we're going to be a point for that. And if in, future research they discover that exposure to RF is going to cause ill health effects, which is probably going to happen,
I'm not going to close the public hearing yet, but I have some folks in order. I have Susan, Cheryl, Mark.
So what I wanted to say is that your answer to this gentleman is really something that's troubling me. And that is, we had 10 of these, and here's two more, and you said you're going to have a lot more.
I don't know if I said we're going to have a lot more. Yes.
I mean, and they are all short distance services.
And also the balancing of demand between the macro sites in the area and the backup offloading.
I get that.
And for these sites in particular, that's sort of the primary purpose of these sites. It's not to provide coverage solely to the Dudley Road Volta Hill area.
So my problem is that we have a lot of stuff on our poles, a ton of stuff, and you rightly pointed out to the gentleman. We would like to reduce the poles and the stuff on them instead of, keeping the proliferation going, as it were. And I'm wondering if it's possible to do more of the macro sites than these are very convenient, I'm sure. They're probably cheaper and less troublesome until you come to a meeting like this. because they're smaller, they're infill, so to speak, and you don't have to go find a site for a taller macro site. But I'm wondering if you could give me some information about why, from your perspective, why are we doing these as opposed to finding another macro site that would help just as much if you could do one macro site instead of 20 of these?
I think part of it is the fact that it's going to be very difficult to find a location that's going to cover these areas. We've got macro sites. It's going to be very difficult to build a 150-foot plus or minus tower that would be able to serve the same offloading purpose as these small cells, first of all. Secondly, in this particular area, to handle the sectors of particular macro sites that we are trying to help relieve demand pressure on, if we could put a rooftop installation in as opposed to a monopole or a lattice tower installation, that would be great. However, this area doesn't offer that. Or we did not find any, there's no suitable building in this area that provides a platform for rooftop installation. Beyond that, this is the technology that's being deployed now because it is smaller, cheaper, and more efficient.
I get the smaller and the cheaper and the more efficient, but it's more clutter for the communities.
And I believe at some point in one of the previous public hearings, somebody raised the issue of what happens when we want to put our utilities underground. And I think at that point, we'd have to go find something else, whatever that would be. That would be an interesting dilemma. I mean, because we are, on one hand, have
a mandate again from Congress started to provide seamless coverage from coast to coast, basically. That is that one of the primary goals of the telecommunications Act of 1996 is to expedite the rollout of wireless coverage so that everybody can get a benefit. And then with regard to this is self-fulfilling prophecy idea, that is true, but you know, tell the customers. And Verizon isn't building towers and providing these services for itself.
There are people who
I don't know.
So let me just ask you one more question.
Yes.
So what if we start to with the task of going back and finding if you could find a macro site that would cover, you know, pretend this was going to be underground. We'd have to find another site. So what if we tried to do with that?
I can tell you that they would tell me so much accurate and say this is what we're proposing. And this is what we are proposing. We are not proposing another macro site in the Newton or Greater Newton area, and we're not proposing a loop hub installation in this particular neighborhood. We're proposing these stealth installations that are going to look like anything and everything that any other utility provider has.
That's not going to make us happy when you say it's going to be just like the mess of the mess. That's not a good argument.
My suggestion is just like the mess in the rest of the city, but what I'm saying is other utility providers have equipment on the poles that look remarkably similar, and we are not going to be the incremental difference is going to be significant in terms of what we are adding by these. Whereas people in this area, if Verizon came in, if I were here, I guess I wouldn't be here for the zoning board to propose a 150-foot tower at the top of wherever the highest point around Baltic Road is. There would be a heck of a lot more people in this room, or whatever room we'd be in, complaining extraordinarily loudly about the burden of that. So when we were trying to, the goal of these, aside from faster, cheaper, quicker, is they try to make them as indistinguishable from the generic landscape as possible.
So
while still providing the service.
Thank you.
I'm gonna keep this in committee for a little bit to complete this conversation, and then if people really have burning statements they would like to be able to make, we'll give time to that. I just want to mention that the last time, a couple of times you were here, we were joined by Alan Mandel from the Law Department, who concurred with all of the statements you made about where the law stands and what the limits of our authority are, and I just wanted to put that on the table. It was more than just that we're not allowed to use thinking about concern about emissions or wavelengths or whatever, that we're not allowed to use that as a discussion point. But in fact, our authority is limited. We can require you not to have a second poll as a result of the installation. But I'm not sure how much else we can do. So just with that in mind, ahead, Cheryl, and then Mark.
First of all, we would love everything to be undergrounded, and we're working on that. And Councillor Albright is spearheading that. So we're on the same page with that. You said that the power strength for the tall towers is 1% of what the FCC allows. What is the power for this one?
I don't have the numeric answer for that question.
Okay. Years ago, we dealt with, it was an AM station, and RFI, and what the FCC said was okay, and several other countries had said, no, it wasn't, and it caused constraints, and we became aware that we are not allowed to use that criteria, which is the health of our citizens, which is amazing to me that we're not allowed to use that criteria, but I understand that we're not. So This gentleman brought up an interesting question. Will that create a basis? And Councilor Gentile was saying that they can come back and do whatever they want because it already is a base station. Will this pole legally be a base station if we grant it?
When you said existing base station, if I may, do you mean that as a term under the Spectrum Act that was recently mentioned by Congress? Or I mean, what was your...
I was borrowing from the earlier part of the conversation where you were talking about building, and once the tower went onto the building, it might be special permitting to get there in the first place.
Right.
But once it was there, the precedent had been set, and it was now a different thing. And that's the conversion, or the danger of the conversion that I see potentially here, is that once something goes in, now it's pre-existing condition.
So, is that the case? Yes, just for that
particular
pole, that is the case.
So that means you can come in, you can put more things on it, you can upgrade it. Is that what that means? Without coming back to the city?
We still have to come back to the city for permission. What the Spectrum Act did was, it said you don't have to go through full-blown zoning. So we wouldn't have to go get a special,
We still need to get some sort of a permit or approval from the city.
It wouldn't be a full-blown process, but it would be some kind of administrative review. We couldn't just come in
so
and
it doesn't have
do
to come back
want.
To this city.
No, at my village, they have, I checked with John Lojack, and they had to get a building permit, which they have. But they didn't obviously come
in. They didn't have to come back.
Can we keep this thing for now?
So I have a concern about that issue. This is my ward. I drive down Dublin Road. I do have Verizon. I don't lose service. I understand it's not for current service. It's for overload. But I really don't want to create these small towers, which is what the pole with this equipment will be all over the city. And I know we can't use the health concern, but 30 feet from someone's house is a concern, although that will not be the basis to which I would not go for this, because we're not allowed to use it. But, you know.
So do you feel that you need to have an opinion from the law department
I think that would help because in the past, what we've learned is we don't have the right to say no because the FCC, well, at least in this other case, the FCC trumps the entire board voted.
We've been told we have limited authority to condition these.
Limited, right. But what it would be good to know what it is because why are we having this discussion if we really don't? If we really can't deny it, so it would be good to know.
This is distinct from the zoning process under the zoning code, so the criteria are specific to this location. And the statute and Assistant City Solicitor Mandel is very familiar with it, so he can probably advise you totally properly.
On what grounds we can deny it, or
on what grounds we can deny it. With respect to the idea of,
can you
I imagine that he will come back to you and say that with regard to potential criminal aspects of our ethnicities, local board can...
I'm aware that is not a reason for denial. Creating towers all over the city, our aesthetic might be a reason.
Aesthetic, well, I mean, again, I would direct you to
so I would like to know that,
in my view, or in Verizon's view of the law, aesthetics is not a ground for denying a particular location.
Why don't we ask that?
I
get your point.
Okay.
What we're hearing is that you at least, and maybe others will agree, want to wait and get an opinion from our law department on these two items.
Within two locations. If it creates a base station, what does that mean? Or what is a tower? What does that mean? And also, at what grounds do we have
for denial?
Yes.
Okay. Nadia, do you have that?
Okay, we'll be talking to Alan tomorrow anyway. So, I have Mark running for the...
I'll be brief. I mean, I agree with Cheryl about the concern regarding what, once we approve, what could go in there afterwards. I think that's a very valid concern. We've already voted for some of these. I want to know before we go any further what the concern is. So my simple request is I'll move to hold if you want a motion, so we can hold on with your board if you want to respond. But so we can get Alan's opinion and get some guidance as to what we can and can't do.
Okay. I think that seems to be consensus, but I'm letting Vicki, if you still have something.
Yeah, I was going to move hold, but you've done that, right?
Yep.
All right, so shame on me for not paying closer attention to this when the last petitions came in, because if I'm under, and prior that, the time before that I was not here. So what I'm now understanding is this is really seems like a new technology, and I think we should have had, as a committee, a much broader discussion about how we want to handle this. Because, and what drives us home is the gentleman's point from Dudley Road. You know, when he said what's going on here is we're transforming a utility pole into a mini cell tower or a base station. And I'm not so sure that that's a good idea throughout the city of Newton. I think it's a shame we already approved some without having a broader discussion about how much control that we have. And I appreciate what counsel for the petition has said about seamless coverage, but it also seems to me there's a difference between seamless coverage and there's overkill. And I drive throughout this city. I'm a Verizon customer. I haven't had a call drop in 10 years, okay? And it seems to me that the petitioner should be under some obligation to show why there is a real need. And I'm not so sure that there's a real need here. So I'm glad we're going to hold it. And I think that we need, at some point, we don't need to rush into, I don't think we have to rush into approving this, or we have every right, we can deny it. If they want to sue us, you know, they're certainly entitled to do that, but I don't think we need to rush into granting any more of these until we've discussed it more.
I agree. I think we can hold this and invite Alan in to our office meeting.
Yeah, good.
There was some other...
I realize that. Again, Vicki, yeah. And then...
Yeah, I'll be brief too. I'm very glad that we're going to get advice from council, because I was not aware when we granted the previous one the extent to which we were allowing the proliferation of the change of use from a telephone pole into a cell tower. And I just as one last comment, there are a couple places in Newton that are very high. I know Baldpate Hill is high, and the highest point outside of the Blue Hills is Institution Hill at the top of the...
You're going to be really brief.
Harry Road, yeah. All right, this is not much more. But look into the buildings up there, because instead of having to create a 150-foot tower, maybe it's only a 20-foot pole, or maybe it's just at the on the chimney of one of these buildings.
Okay, so there are folks here from the public who would, I think I'm going to leave the public hearing open until our meeting in August, which will be August 10th, Wednesday, August 10th. We'll bring this item back up at that time for whoever's here on August 10th. And if you would like to hold your comments till then, if you have a question that you think we ought to be incorporating.
I think we have something you want to
say. I just wanted to say one thing that Representative Ryan mentioned, is that he mentioned that this is for Verizon for customers. It is for Verizon. They're very popular for something it's for Verizon.
Okay, thank you. Anything else that you'd like to, okay. And please know that you can write to us, email us, if you have any.
Or call me.
Just call your board alderman, Cheryl Lappin.
I know I came in late, so I apologize, but on the document is wireless communication equipment, mm-hmm. Under the zoning ordinance, there is by right, there is special permit, there is administrative site plan review. So there's all three. So I don't know if it was explained exactly what it was.
But if not, we should get some clarification. It's all in there, but maybe get a little primer on it.
Good point.
But if it would, sorry, but if it was by right, council wouldn't be here. If it was special permit, should be in land use. And if
I understand, but did we, because grant of location, maybe it got put here. I'm just trying to your point about your building, I don't know what happened with your building. I'm just trying to say that maybe we should get a little understanding of exactly what folks are aware of. Grant of location. And they probably do some phone appeal.
Okay. We'll contact the planning department.
Yeah,
as well.
If it was administrative site, it would be planning.
So, we have a motion to hold just from Councilor Laredo or Councilor?
Councilor Laredo.
All in favor of holding this item? It is unanimous. You're all going to be here on the Sunday. Thank you very much. We will take this up again in August. If not, we'll let you, if anything happens and the meeting is postponed or canceled, we'll let you know.
You might want to take it up in September.
Yeah, I need to let them know. They're not going to get noticed yet.
They can check them at the court. Government is a participatory sport. You got to participate a little bit.
We are way behind what I had hoped.
Oh, my God. They can call the court off.
I first want to mention that we have we were joined in the middle of that unusually lengthy conversation by President Lennon, and Councilor Driscoll Glazer from Ward 3.
Oh, what are you wearing? President Lennon told me to wear.
Well, I didn't listen to what President Lennon said.
Okay. No, I'm not wearing
We have four more public hearings. Item number 254-16 is a Verizon. First is Verizon Wireless. For granted location to relocate a pole approximately 28 feet east of another pole as part of the Elliott Street Bridge reconstruction. Who's joining us for it? Mr.
Dagley and... Hey, man, you don't want to have No, but
we're asking Verizon to move the pole. Got it. So it's not Verizon petition.
We're petitioning on our behalf.
Okay.
So the two poles that we're asking for relocation are on our side of the river.
Yes.
So the first pole is going to be moved 28 feet southerly, and the second pole is going to be moved 3 feet towards the shoreline. I've got pictures. Sorry, this is the biggest I can get. But that's the existing pole that's going to move 28 feet to this painted location. And that's the pole that's going to be moved out 3 feet. And these are necessitated by ADA compliance and plus the reconstruction of the bridge. So they're not in the ideal situation right now. The new location will be.
Is the sidewalk coming out?
The sidewalk's coming out. It will be a wider sidewalk, ADA compliant. But these poles have to be relocated.
Are these poles to the end of the bridge then? They're not on
the bridge. No, they're on the bridge. They'll be on the bridge too.
Okay.
There's no way we could borrow these utilities?
For $1 million, we could.
$1 million?
If it's a historic bridge, you have to do everything inside the arches. So,
you remember this thing before, to reconstruct the LA Street. Okay.
Are they charging us? Yes.
This was part of the understood cost of the
bridge.
Is it included in
the? Included in the two.
It's part of the construction of the bridge itself. It was included? It's included. It's roughly $13,000.
Okay. What comments from the committee?
We're doing the whole bridge. Why couldn't we borrow the utilities as part of that process?
It would be added cost because the wires will still remain after construction. The only thing that they're bearing are conduits for future use, which is for...
I'm a little confused. We're deconstructing the entire bridge.
Right.
We have wires that cross the bridge.
Right. And it will continue to cross the bridge after the bridge is constructed.
But why aren't we burying the wires since the bridge is completely exposed?
For conduit
cost.
Bridge.
Well, how much cost?
It's roughly, on the roadway, it's about $500 per linear foot. on this bridge, it would probably be at least double that. And plus, we've got a limited footprint. In the roadway, we've got a lot more space. So in this, because
you're saying there's no space underneath the pavement to put the wiring, is that what you're saying?
Well, under the infrastructure.
Right.
For conduit?
Right, because it's a historic bridge.
I'm just trying to understand, I'm not...
No, I'm trying to clarify. Because it's a historic bridge, we can't put any conduit on the sides of the bridge, so everything would have to go inside the sidewalk area. So there's limited space there, it's only 24 feet wide.
And that's not wide enough to be able to put wiring in?
Right, because the arches are tight, and Eversource back, I believe 4 or 5 months ago, already applied for a grant allocation for high voltage lines that have to be put in the future. And that was granted. And there's no more room for anything else on the ground.
So at some point in the future, there's going to be high voltage lines there?
Right.
And we can't bury another conduit. I mean, now that Marcus and others have brought up, we can't bury another conduit next to it and just, you know, another foot lower or next to it to make that work?
Is limited space, that's a problem.
You mean there's limited depth because of the way?
That's another problem.
Did you look into it?
I'm sorry?
Did we actually look into it to say, can we bury the wires?
Yes, they did. Unfortunately, there was no room. And cost is another factor. It's a big factor.
Well, which was there no room or was it a cost?
There's really no room, to be honest with you, because of the yard.
That's what I'm trying to find out. If it's physically impossible to bury the conduit and the wires, that's one thing. If it's just, it costs a lot, you may still reach the same conclusion, but that's a different decision.
Right.
So you're professionally telling us that we cannot bury these wires, period.
It's a physical concern.
We cannot do it.
Right.
I don't know if folks recall the construction methodology of this bridge.
I know it's
pretty complicated.
I understand, but I want to get a clear answer to the question.
Yeah. Okay.
Ask how big a conduit.
Right.
How big a conduit?
You have the floor.
Go ahead, ask the question.
I'm sorry. Folks, let's get it in order here. Okay.
I just want to make sure you said it was part of the cost, correct? If it's part of the cost we're splitting with Kingdom, I have heard you're splitting everything down the middle. Is this part of everything?
This is the cost. This is Luke's share of the cost. $13,000.
So it's $26,000?
Mm-hmm.
So it's only, okay.
Lines different
for half.
Yeah.
Just
want to
make sure.
Anybody else want it? Again, just not to be a pain in the neck, but is there a 24-foot wide sidewalk all the way across the bridge?
Mm-hmm. Sidewalk, no. The sidewalk would be 5 feet wide.
5 feet wide. But at some point you said something about 24 feet.
This is the width of the curb-to-curb line. The width of the actual roadway.
All right. So... Again, to a novice, okay, you've got a pole here, you've got a pole here, and you've got a bridge with a 5 foot wide sidewalk. It does seem to be a reasonable thought to think that you could, in somewhere in that 5 feet, there may be one conduit, but you would think you could put a second conduit next to it and run some wires there. Why doesn't that work?
Because the conduit that's going for the future use of Eversource, the high voltage goes 115,000 kV, similar to the lines that were put in 7th Street 3 years ago, and they're oil cooled, so they have certain clearances that have to be maintained for that.
Wider.
And because of that, we can't encroach closer to those lines.
So it basically eats up the 5 feet.
Right.
Same.
Madam Chair, if I may, very similar kind of equation. It's very similar to you can't run one utility, all the utilities in one trench.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very similar to that concept that you can't have
a certain distance between things.
You have to have a certain distance between all of them and the right to wait for the sidewalk doesn't allow that distance to put ever force in there.
You couldn't go in the roadway and close the sidewalk?
No, the roadway is, we talked about the bridge, if you recall, when we went back to the bridge for the money for the bridge because of the arch, the way the arches are, you've only got a certain distance that you can go down and you can't go any further beyond that. So there really is a lot of constraints with this bridge.
Okay. So this is in my ward. Would someone like to?
I'll move it.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve the fencer's time sentence. Is that correct?
Yes.
So all in favor of approval? It's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 250-16 is Comcast. Petition for grant of location for conduit in Washington Street in an existing plant. Going to 612 Washington Street. Hello, we are joined by...
My name is Tato from NJK, representing Comcast for this petition. Comcast is requesting to place 1 3-inch pipe from an existing fault that's in front of 580 Washington Street, fence down Washington Street westerly 250 feet to a private property line located at the east corner of 65 Washington Street for
Sorry about that.
I'm watching
that.
Okay, you guys, turn off
your cell phone. I better have it off. They get a sign on the door.
Yeah. I'm
sorry. I apologize.
All right. So we're just requesting for, again, for infrastructure to be placed in to see 612 for commercial properties, and they're requesting service from Comcast. We need to continue down the road, underground, to try and put these services.
Okay, thank you very much. Any comments, questions from the committee?
You can send your comments for Court Street, too?
Yes, we haven't put the petition in yet, but I will be working on Court Street. That is also one of mine, and so is Elliott Street Bridge. That is also my responsibility. So I'm working on all those projects, but they are not, this is just a separate one.
Okay.
I'm still working on 77 Court Street and getting a correct design in there. And as far as Elliott Street, I recommend exactly what the city, because we've been working on that project for over a year now. And there is no place in that road where you can put anything, especially with the new piping coming in and the new high voltage. We have to be 42 inches away from that high voltage. Your sidewalk's only 5 feet deep or 5 feet wide. You still have RPN, you still have other utilities that need to get in there. So it's highly recommended that that's the way that one goes. Which is, we really appreciate that.
Should go under the river,
I was thinking about underwater or wireless, but apparently I don't want to put a wireless cell tower anywhere over there. So.
All right. Is there anyone here who wants to speak on this petition? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing. And
I think I'll move approval.
All right. We have motion to approve. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you very much.
We'll see you for the next one.
So you know about the number two, man.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You got me next, though.
I don't know.
I'll have to
be out there in a week. 251-16 is National Grid, petitioning for grant of location in DuPont Road from an existing gas station to a house for a new gas service at number 45. Mr. Regan.
Good evening. My name is Kenneth Regan. I'm here from National Grid. And tonight, National Grid hereby respectfully request your consent to install and maintain approximately 50 feet, more or less, of Florence Gas Main in DeForest Road, Newton. From the existing Florence Gas Main at house number 36, subtly to house number 45 for a new gas service.
Okay. Any comments from the committee?
Any other people from the committee?
did this go out to the entire neighborhood?
Is that your, are you asking a question?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, here it is. Yeah.
All right. This is Ward 4.
I haven't heard from anyone.
Okay. No comments. I'm going to open a public hearing. Is there anyone here?
Who tells us this?
On this petition. Mm-hmm. Seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing. Okay? Any comments from the committee?
I'll move it.
We have a motion to approve. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Two more. We have Verizon petition for grant of location for conduit in front of 133 Franklin Street. A proposed handbill. This is a Ward 7.
Franklin Street again.
Yeah.
It's different than the address that was before us a few weeks ago.
Oh, you're here with me.
Yes. Let's start
off. My name is Bill Wallace.
Sorry?
Bill Wallace, representing Verizon on this petition.
Yes.
This petition is to place conduit from an existing pole number 1100/15. It is located on the northeast. This particular pole is located on the northeast side of Franklin Street. The proposal is to place a 4-inch conduit in a southeasterly direction, approximately 55 feet across Franklin Street, running down the in an easterly direction on the southerly side of Franklin Street, approximately 333 feet, to a point where a new handhole will be placed in front of 100 Franklin Street. This request is to provide service for a new house that was built at 100 Franklin Street and has requested Verizon service.
Is this
enough
for the definition?
Yes. Handhole is a smaller manhole. It's about a 3x3 casting unit that will go under, that will go in the ground, and it'll just have a, it's basically to provide access to the conduit coming down the street, and then the conduit that will come from the house.
So put a hand in there, not a man.
Correct. You would, yes, right. You would have to have a very small man. Okay. Someone else. They tend to work in there.
Okay.
Okay, Mark.
So this is, just so I understand it, you're going from a utility pole.
Existing utility pole.
You're undergrounding a wire.
Undergrounding a piece of some conduit to place wire into.
Okay, underground conduit to place wire into under the street so that can service a new house.
Correct.
Alright, so we're not having any overhead wiring.
No, the reason the need for the conduit is the pole line stops at this particular pole right at the intersection of Franklin and I think it's Beach Cross.
Mm-hmm. Beach Cross, yeah. Okay.
There's a pole there that already exists. That's where the light company ran through. It looks like they recently did conduit down the middle of the street. And this conduit is necessary to get to that new house that was built at 100 Franklin.
So I guess just want to be clear, we're not adding any poles.
We're not adding
any overhead wiring. We're putting underground wiring.
Correct.
The problem is we're digging up the ceiling of the particle
to do that. Yeah.
So does the committee recall that this is the very same house?
Yeah.
On the street where all the folks got together, and we may be hearing from them later this summer.
But that was
all supposed to have gotten
this was the picture contract. Yeah.
This was for electric service solar, right?
Well, they wanted to underground all their services before they repaved the streets was what they were trying to put together. So Verizon should be hearing from the rest of the neighborhood too. I just asked Nadia if she hasn't heard anything from the neighborhood since that time.
But digging in the trench, what we're gonna do is
We're just going to remind the committee that this was the one that John and I facilitated through you, Councilor Ray, we went out and been on site. The reason why this is here is because the pole ends at Beach Cross there. They tried to get the access from the back of the house, but they had to get easements with some of the property owners gave them. So the only way they can get any of the services from gas to utilities such as this is by tracking through the street and running it this way. So this is a necessity based upon that they couldn't get the easement.
So the question then is when you're going to fully repave the road or not, which may be delayed so you can
based upon what the community comes back to. And
Could you reach, if we approve this tonight, could you reach out to those same petitioners just let them know this has been approved? This is it.
Sure, Don has all the information and everything.
Anybody
else? Well, my understanding is that we entered into a voluntary agreement with the homeowner because we could not require the utility to fully repave the street. But the commissioner was pretty strong in his opinion that the street should be fully repaved. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how does this fit in with that requirement?
I'll let John answer that.
Sure. Yes. Part of the commission for previous grant location, the committee of this board gave the deadline of August 26th for the neighborhood to get their act together.
Right.
Pending that, we received a certified bank check for $13,000. We changed for the paving of the roadway from curb line to curb line to the limits of the project. If the neighborhood did not petition to get that done, the money would be used for the paving of the roadway.
so it's guaranteed.
Right. So you're going to coordinate everything.
Right.
Okay. So we did.
That was part of the field.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for reminding us.
And just to be clear on this, the different utilities, gas, the electric, the Verizon, they're going to all coordinate, and there's going to be one paving. They'll run your conduit, separate them as they need to, and then there will be one paving.
There'll be several different trenches, one paving.
Okay. I think we got this one under control last time around, but it's good to refresh. So. This is just one piece, and there's a lot of pieces. Is there anyone else who wants to? Okay, so I'm going to open up public hearing.
I just have one quick question. Will the neighbors that are involved in this, does this go far enough for all of them?
This location is on the very dead end of the street, where the street dead ends on the right-hand side, so if you head down the street, the house is the very last house on the right, so cover all the houses.
Okay.
You cross both sides.
Great.
So they'd be willing to do that.
That's it.
Thanks. Going to open a public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak on this petition? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Motion?
I'll move subject to the conditions that were placed previously on the other construction of the street. I just want to make sure we're incorporating whatever else we've done previously.
Those conditions went to
those were on the other one.
Property owner, the utility. Yeah. If you recall, we had to go ahead.
It's on the field in front of that.
Okay. If we don't need that, okay. As long as it's covered, I'm fine.
Okay.
I won't have to add on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. We're all set. And it's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, one more petition. Light Tower Fiber Network, item number 253-16, petition of different locations. To place conduit from a Verizon manhole in front of 160 Wells Avenue, 19-180 Wells Avenue.
That's right.
Can you
introduce yourself? I'm Steve from White Tower.
Mm-hmm.
White Tower Fiber Network proposes a 500-foot trench from manhole 47 over 237, the Verizon manhole, located in front of 160 Wells. We currently have a spike point there that we'll be tapping into and extending our network to 180 Wells. This trench will be in the easement all the way in the grass, and it will tap into the building. There won't be any construction in the street at all. Will be mainly in the easement. The only part that we'll be digging into is into the manhole, which is in the sidewalk, which is all asphalt.
Okay. Thank you.
You're
welcome. Any questions or comments on this?
So that easement, is there a berm?
Yeah, from the curb line to the in between the curb line and the sidewalk, there's a grass patch there, and we'll be borrowing wages there.
And so what does it look like when you think?
We're going to boom feed it. It'll look like it as it is right now.
Yep.
Okay.
Anybody else?
So the sidewalk will be accessible?
Yes.
The whole time?
No. Well, not during the excavation.
Okay, and how long will this project
be? Total of 5 days is worst case scenario. So five or less.
Okay. Because people do walk.
Yep. I think actually there's two sides of the sidewalk in front of the street.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, they will have to come in to get the permit through public work. And as a condition of that permit, we set up the parameters to make sure that if they do cut down a sidewalk, they have converted the traffic over to an additional sidewalk, put up the signage that's going
to happen. Okay,
good. We'll put those on the permit.
Thank you.
I will move approval unless there's
another anything else. We have a motion to approve from Councilor Blatt.
Can we do a public hearing?
Oh, sorry.
Oh. There are no members of the public here.
Hi there. Public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak on this petition?
Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing, and we have a motion to approve from Councilor Lappin. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're right on the nose of 8:30, and I was told we were going to be joined by 3 people, and I think 2 people.
Rachel Black is on her way. She is delayed. She was out of Neptune Square, and her car was towed. So she is trying to take care of that. She was very late to the meeting, so she parked in the CVS parking
lot. Well, we're the Ward 3 council. Let's take care of this stuff.
So she's currently taking care of that.
I've met Rachel Black.
Rachel is with the planning department. She is the urban planner for the planning department.
She's the urban designer.
So she should be here, hopefully, by the time we're done.
So we are joined by Director of Operations, Jamie Mark, and
This is Jim Fitzgerald. He is the Director of Transportation for Environmental Partners Group, which is the consultant that the city has hired to help us develop these organization plans for complete streets.
I'm just going to read the item into the record. We're picking this up under 200-15, which is Council Laredo's item for an update on the strategic plan for street and sidewalk improvements, but really we're going to focus on the complete streets policy that you have in your packet and what's being proposed and discussed in a number of committees right now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to let Jim do most of the talking this evening, and then you can we'll field questions along the way. So the whole thing that's prompting all this is complete streets funding. So I just want to first start describing what complete streets are and why they're important. So complete streets is just a term that's used to design to describe a roadway that provides accommodations, safe and convenient accommodations for all users, not just the vehicles, but the pedestrians, the bicycles, transit users, etc. And so it's really been a big push all around the country, especially in Massachusetts. It's really grown legs in over the past decade or so. There are all sorts of well-documented benefits to complete streets. Certainly safety benefits. You know, we typically think of accidents along the roadway as involving vehicles, but really a lot of accidents each year occur with pedestrians and bicyclists. So by providing safe accommodations, the rate of accidents, the rate of fatalities and injuries dramatically reduced. There are benefits having to do with health by providing alternative modes of transportation other than driving the car, like walking or biking to nearby destinations. You're really helping to reduce the amount of obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, etc. So the medical community has really gotten behind this notion of complete streets as well. Environmental benefits, certainly less cars means less emissions. And believe it or not, it actually helps local economies. Also, the studies exist out there where locations where providing all these accommodations for bicycles and transit, in the end, result in boosts in the local economy, reductions in vacancies for retail space, for instance, increases in sales, etc. So, because of all this, MassDOT really has gotten behind it and is really trying to promote municipalities to really incorporate the notions of complete streets in their radial projects. And as a result, they've created this funding source. Complete streets funding to incentivize the municipalities to really look at this on a day-to-day basis. And so when roadways are being reconstructed, you look at it one step a little bit further and say, okay, what more can we do here with minor fixes to really maximize our usage for the other modes of transportation? So the funding has been emerging over the course of the last year, about half a year ago or so. They really finalized, MassDOT finalized the procedure for getting these funds. And the first rounds of funds are coming from the casino funding.
for the first year. And so what's been determined is that there are they will be distributing up to $400,000 per year for construction of these treatments that would help pedestrians and bicyclists and transit users. There's a three-tier process involved in accessing these funds. The first tier is adopting a complete streets policy, which basically outlines that the municipality, the state, will be looking at ways that things will operate in the future moving forward, where when we're reconstructing a roadway, that things like pedestrian and bicycle accommodations are considered in the equation to see what can be provided in a realistic, feasible manner. It's not a policy that dictates that you will have bicycle and pedestrian accommodations everywhere. It's really a realistic look at things is really what it comes down to in this policy. Tier two is to create a prioritization plan. And that's what our firm has been hired to do by the city. Prioritization plan basically looks at everything that you have for assets having to do with bicycle accommodations, sidewalks, wheelchair ramps, transit stops, etc., and identifies where the priorities are. There are different ways of doing this. How we did it was by taking into consideration significant locations, things like schools or town village centers or whatever, recreational fields, things like that. We're using those locations as kind of the priority areas and really making sure that the accommodations there are being done first as a priority, because they tend to draw the most pedestrians or bicyclists. The prioritization plan is submitted to MassDOT, as is that Tier 1 complete streets policy for review, and then ultimately Tier 3 is to get approval on projects that MassDOT deems worthy based on the prioritization plan. So that's basically the whole scenario of what this funding is all about. So,
I'll just jump in, and what I'd like to add is some of those things. It's not just about the public buildings or the schools, but we've looked at as far as we're developing this prioritization plan, public buildings, the high transportation nodes, the MBTA stops, commuter rail stops, the bus stops,
the trails,
the aqueduct trails. We're looking at the parks as well. So we're looking at all the amenities that are out there that draw crowds, that draw pedestrians. And then as part of the project, environmental partners, we've provided them the information from the Newton Motion transportation strategy that we're doing now, our current bicycle plan, all the data we've already been working on was provided to them. They've gone out, they've done field studies and field assessments. And what they're really looking at is tying the gaps together. Where do we have gaps in our network, whether it's a bike network, whether it's a sidewalk network, whether it's just gaps in the transportation mode. So that's what they've done. And each one of those ranks as a priority. So if it's close to a school, it may get a higher priority than if it's close to a transportation node. So in the end, it's kind of a weighted scale, if you will.
It's all mapped out. So we do all this work on GIS. So there's an infinite amount of information that's included for each of the accommodations. And as Shane has mentioned, we're looking at a network-wide kind of view of things, as well as a very detailed look at things as well. So we want to make sure that there's continuous accommodations from point A to point B across the city, and things that make sense to really get the most bang for the buck when it comes to these funds.
A few other things on this. Right now, with this being the first year, as Jim said, with this being funded by the casino revenues, this MassDOT has said to the municipalities they foresee this being a multi-year and continuing, but right now this is a one-year deal. There's no guarantee this will turn into a two or a three or even beyond that. Their intent is to do that. But the monies have to be spent and the construction has to be completed by June 30th of 2017. So we are really in a short time crunch to get all these things done, get it submitted to MassDOT for them to review it, come back to us to say here are the projects that we are going to fund, and then for us to do the final design, put it out for construction, and then perform the construction. All of that has to happen by June 30th. So our prioritization plan is really looking at the low-cost, high-impact areas. Projects that are very easy design projects, projects that we can get designed very quickly, very easily, and then let it out for construction and get it done. So low cost, high impact.
Okay. I've got a list there. Mark?
Well, I docketed it. And frankly, when I docketed the concept of updating the complete streets program, I had understood that the department was looking at thinking differently about how it was doing street construction, looking outward from the property lines of individual houses inward to look at trees and utility poles and things like that. But this looks to me rather different than that.
So this is two different things, Counselor. Is if you have the policy, which I believe was in everyone's package, the policy really covers exactly what you're talking about. What we have to do, as Jim talked about, is this is a complete street grant. So we have, for the last several years, looked at doing these different amenities that Jim spoke about with bump outs and making the city more pedestrian for different modes of transportation, but it's never been formalized. So the policy that we include in your packet is our formalization of a complete streets policy. This is completely separate from the grant, but in order to qualify for any grant money, you have to have a formalized policy, which is this.
I'll get to my questions on the policy itself in a moment because I've got some comments on that. But I want to understand the grant process a lot more. I'll just say to you, when I was in the school committee, one of the questions I was asked, and we got a grant, is, great, we got some money, what are the ongoing obligations and how are we going to fund it? So how much of a grant do we have here?
So currently we don't have any grant. Let me backtrack. So there's three tiers.
Yeah.
Right now we are running parallel tier one and tier two. We've got the approval from MassDOT to run parallel to tier one, tier two. That is $50,000 grant money. That $50,000 covers us hiring a consultant, which we've done with environmental partners, to help us develop the prioritization plan. Yes. Once we submit this plan to MassDOT, we submit the plan to MassDOT with the projected cost for each project, and then MassDOT will say to us, after a review period, they will come back and say, you will get number seven, number five, number four. So in the end, we'll get the grant money based upon what MassDOT feels is typically in line with our quality plan. But right now, we don't have any of that $400,000.
I really want to understand this much better. So the 50.
Mark, if you hold on, I just like to welcome Rachel Black. Would you like to come up to the table?
And your Ward 3 counselor is going to take care of all the problems.
Yeah.
I'm teasing, Barbara. They have absolutely no authority whatsoever over that. So I understand, $50,000 is the grant we got from the state.
That's correct.
And how much does this contract cost us?
This is $50,000.
Okay, so yes. the grant from the state has funded this work.
That's correct.
And now you're going to be submitting requests to the state for various projects, and they're going to select them. And do we have any idea how much money we could potentially get?
So
So you can get, the first year, you can get up to
$400,000. Yeah. It's well, all right. Okay. Yeah. I'm sitting here, I thought you said
$400,000
for the state.
No. $400,000 for each municipality.
Oh,
it's
right.
Our intent to submit a minimum of $400,000.
That's the
whole
$400,000. As I recall, the $450,000 that was described to us as budget as potentially available to augment the roads program.
That is correct.
But we don't have that cost.
Okay. So the first $50,000 is gone. That's your work. You're going to provide us some reports. Great. I don't mean to diminish. We get a lot of reports here that we then that sit on the shelf, and I'm concerned about that. So the
and if I may, real quick, Councilor. This is not a report that we're going to be submitting to the council. This is a prioritization plan that we will be submitting to MassDOT. We will, once MassDOT grants the prioritization plan and tells us what we get, then we will submit that to the council.
We might get up to $400,000, but what's the realistic estimate of how much each city and town is going to get? Because I can't imagine there's enough money here to fund even proportionally $400,000 for each city or town.
So Jim,
$12.5 million total.
Statewide.
Is available statewide. And because this is the first year that this program is out, quite honestly, MassDOT is filling their way around with us. And that's why it's also critical that we get our submission in as soon as possible to get in there. So are there any guarantees? No, there aren't any, but from what we have been told multiple times by MassDOT, it's up to $400,000.
All right. I'm love to see us get $400,000, but if I'm seeing $12.5 million statewide and we're the 10th or 11th largest city in the Commonwealth, and there's 360-odd cities and towns, I think a $400,000 estimate is rather optimistic.
So, Jeff, you need to have faith on that because so many are in the
correct. It all depends on how many municipalities have already submitted. And I don't have the exact number here with me now, but I do know that there are many communities, I believe 100, who have passed their complete streets policy. As far as the number who have actually submitted their prioritization plan and submitted Tier 3 projects, there aren't that many. So I don't have the number, I'm sorry. But so do we have a good chance of getting up to $400,000? It's not going to be a dollar more, but the exact number, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I would say, yes, we would, especially being in the city of New York.
All right, so you're going to have this policy, and you're using that's requirement, and then you're going to be drafting your suggested priorities of various projects. Are we going to vet those before they're submitted, or how's that going to work?
So we've already been working towards this prioritization plan. There's two different time frames that you can submit. The first deadline is this Friday. That's 2 days from now on the 15th. That intent is for projects that will take 9 months. And then the next time to submit is in September 15th, and that is for projects that are 6 months. That being said, that 9 months or that 6 months is everything. That's not from construction. That's from the time you submit it, to the time they review it, to the time that you design it, let it out, construction, and construct. So it's our intent to submit the prioritization plan this Friday to get ourselves in a queue, because this is really about, as Jim said, the MassDOT's really feeling their way around. So this is about us trying to get in there and get money from the state that we don't have currently.
So can you share with us what you're
I can tell you some examples we haven't vetted. Everything else we haven't we're not at a final. We're still in the vetting process.
It's due Friday.
We're darn close to it. But there's still some vetting. So some of the areas that we're looking to submit is possible greenway connection on California bridges where the greenway comes out, the Charles Greenway comes out, and then there's a section there along the market that isn't connected, so people are using the sidewalk and the bikes, and it's very dangerous for pedestrians.
So we're looking at that as an opportunity to make that connection, so when you come off the trail, you'll have a clear guidance for the bicyclist to get to the second portion of the trail on the opposite side of California Street. That's one project we're looking at potentially submitting. Another one would be no turn on red signs that illuminate when the pedestrian button is hit. Because we hear a lot from in the Newton and Motion transportation strategy as we've conducted these events, that when the pedestrian crossings are lit and we hear at all the signs and counters that vehicles are still turning right and almost hitting people. So we're looking at a couple of intersections where that are problematic to install the no turn on red sign. So what will happen is when you push the pedestrian button, the sign will illuminate and it will tell anybody in a car, do not turn. You can't turn right on red. So we're looking at a couple of those intersections, such as Walnut and Watertown, Walnut and Washington, where there's some issues there. So those are a couple of the examples. One other example we're looking at is some of the sidewalk gaps, especially near the Wells Avenue area where the business park is. Lots of pedestrian traffic there with the JCC, with the business park there. You can see if you ever drive that section, there's already a dirt trail from the pedestrian, but there's no sidewalk. So that's another potential one we're looking at submitting. So it's really the projects that don't require a lot of design time that are quick hitters but high impact. So those are just a couple of examples of some of the
Between now and Friday, you're going to vet a series of projects, have price tags for each one of these?
Yep.
And that's based on your work so far?
Yes.
And when is your report going to be done?
Well, right now what we're doing is we're finalizing the construction budget because we want to make sure that there's adequate funds that are being announced for each and every project. With it being due on Friday, that would be by end of day tomorrow, we'll be done with our work as far as identifying what the cost will be, and then it's a matter of finalizing whatever the priorities are.
I mean, I know you're in a tight time frame, but I'm a little concerned, more than a little concerned, that we're talking about a variety of public works projects that are, yes, they're funded through a grant, but oftentimes grant funding is used as a substitute for city funding, and we've had zero input as to what your guidance or thoughts as to what your thinking is, how you're getting there, how you're going to choose one over the other. I'm concerned about that.
So one thing, if I may, Councillor, one thing that's important for the committee to know is even though this prioritization plan is something we're submitting by Friday, this in no way changes the procedure for accomplishing these projects. In the end, with all the projects that when MassDOT comes back and says you're approved for X amount of projects at this amount of money, we will still have to come through the proper committee. Finance committees, to public facilities, and everything else for those. So that process hasn't changed.
Can you confirm that there's a lot of folks who have questions?
I'm sorry, I have other questions too. So where would you want me to go? Do you want me to stop on this one and go to the policy?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping we could take up the substantive matter of the policy.
Well, but I appreciate that, but this is the absolute first I've heard that the 15th is a deadline that they're submitting projects. And you know, I just gotta go on record for this, Deb. There's a whole list of priority projects out there, and we try to juggle those priorities, and you're now taking certain projects we may not even consider them before and putting them essentially ahead of others because you're looking to get funding for them right away. And there may be a lot of other projects that we might think are more important or more worthy of doing quickly. And I'm very troubled that you're doing this all in 2 days. I mean, I just, with all respect, I know you're on a tight time frame, and I want you to get it in, but that's a concern.
And I will say this is not all within 2 days. We've been working on this for the last at least 4 months.
So we don't have a list of the projects.
Because this is a very timely process with getting together to establish the policy, to do all the field data collection with the rating. It's not something where we just sit on a map and say, okay, let's go after this project, let's go after this one. These are, we've really incorporated all this as part of the transportation strategy. So as we've gone out, we've had the three different transportation strategy events, the public events. As we've heard back from the public, from the residents that are attending these events online and both in person, these are the things that we're looking at are things that the residents are bringing forth to us and saying, hey, there's an issue over here. So what we've done is we've provided that data to environmental partners, to Jim and to his group, and they've gone and they've done the field data collection. They said, okay, yes, there is a problem here, but by the way, not only is there a problem here, but there's also a problem in this section as well. So it's been a very timely process, time-consuming process to do all of that.
I would caution you, I think it's wonderful to get citizen participation and involvement, but I would caution you about being driven too heavily by unscientific surveys about what people want. You're our DPW professionals, and I have a lot more confidence in your ability to pick and choose that than votes of some kind of, you know, focus group.
Yeah. Okay. And I agree with you, and that's why we have professionals to help us.
I'll stop if you want. I have a lot more.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Can I go to the strategy?
Sure.
All right. So I looked at the strategy, and I have some real concerns about what you're putting in here. And I'll tell you why. You're making very broad policy statements that all users equally are entitled to use a roadway network that meets the needs of everyone. And that sounds wonderful. That actually may not be true in some instances. Okay, I can think of significant instances, for example, where roadways, it's not okay for heavy freight vehicles, for example, to be on our roadways. It's not okay for heavy-duty construction vehicles to be on our roadways. The roadways are not designed to be equal for everybody. It's not an equal opportunity policy here. So I really worry by making statements about equal rights to safe use of the roads, we're going to design so that the roads are safe for users of all ages and abilities. I think there's more nuance about that, okay? It sounds great, but I think it could create a lot of problems. I also do not understand at all what this Complete Streets Committee is going to do, why you need it, how it's going to function, what kind of layers of bureaucracy you're creating and doing projects, and I've got a lot of concerns about that there, and that certain projects can be excluded from the roadway reconstruction. The transportation project may be excluded from the idea you're going to provide balance networks only on this, and I also concerned that you're talking about not only publicly but privately funded projects, and I'm not sure what you mean by that, because I'm not sure what say you have over a privately funded parking lot, for example.
Yeah, so we dealt with the private, but what we're so, and I'll let Jim and Rachel tackle some of this, but with some of this policy, we have to have the policy set up in a certain format, because the way that MassDOT looks at these policies, when they adopt them, you have to score a 90 or higher. An 80 or higher. So there's certain language that has to be in the document because it triggers. It's just like when you take an ACT and you do the essay. There's certain language that triggers points to get scored higher. So we're using the format that MassDOT has for the Complete Streets grant funding. With private, what we're saying in here with the private is we're going to encourage private developers and private development to adopt our Complete Street policies and look at different modes of transportation as well. Yes, we don't have authority over them, but especially if they were to come through the special permitting process, then this is a way for us to enforce that the special development, the special permitting follows our Complete Streets and follows the things that we want to accomplish as a city, that you want to accomplish as a council. So that's why that language is in here.
I'll stop. I cannot
block
the conversation.
Okay. Susan and then Cheryl. So the transportation in motion work must have been dovetailed with this work, I'm guessing. That they were, you know, all of that stuff that's in the corridor downstairs must have a lot to do with this.
Absolutely.
This work.
Absolutely.
So I know a lot has gone on, and we have been involved in this, or invited to be involved. I do think just along those lines of what Mark has said, that I think a docket item might have been good earlier for this committee. And I know we've been involved, we've been invited, but you know, a specific docket item might have been a good idea at some point. But I think it's great work. And that you've been doing, and I know I've been following Rachel's work and visited the thing in Walnut Street, Washington Street project that you all worked on, had it postponed because of rain so many times. So it was good work. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I understand you're writing this plan at this time because there's federal money available, but being a planner at heart, having this kind of work to guide all of the work that we do all over the city will pay off, regardless of whether we get a penny from the state, from NSA. So I think it's a great baseline to have to guide everything that's happening afterwards from July 15th on. So I'm appreciative of that. The interesting, you know, relevant thing that's being discussed at a special permit for the Washington Square, whatever it's called, project. We're having a conversation there which is very relevant to this, where there's a discussion about should there be an extra lane for traffic or should it be a bike lane. And there was discussion today on the Newtonville listserv, an interesting conversation about those people, you know, laughing at the city, of course there has to be a bike lane. And some of the other, of course there has to be a traffic lane. And some of the other members of the listserv saying, no, I ride a bicycle, I need a bicycle. So I guess the reason I bring it up tonight is A, it's going to help guide that decision, I'm guessing. But B, there needs to be a ton more education about this complete streets policy, because there are many people, some of them sitting next to me even, who, it feels uncomfortable. You know, the cars have to be safe, they have to be, it felt a little bit that way. But there are, whether it's you or not, there are people who feel the roads are for cars, and that's that. And there's so much traffic, we've got to do it. So education, I don't know if they'll allow you to do anything with education, or it has to be all done for capital projects, but somebody's going to have to educate the public about the complete streets policy and how it works, because people don't get it. So you've got to find a way to do that.
Are you going to vote for the bike lane?
I don't know what I'm going to do. I asked the question because I don't know what I'm going to do. So anyway, I think it's great work. I do wish you'd come and had a conversation with us maybe 2 months ago. So I'll say
that I was approached to put it on the agenda last meeting, but our agenda was so long already, if you recall, we got out fairly late. And so I was not given a docket item. I said I would put it on as a chairman's note, but then we decided to use Mark's item because it certainly is relevant. So sorry about that. Cheryl?
Thank you. I think it's great that we're doing this. I think it's great that we're going after the money. The fact that a lot of it was based on the transportation study, I did go, I think you couldn't go to the demonstration. I did go to the Needham Street display, and I was one of a few people there. So it's not clear how much input you got and how many people were available at that time of day. So I also noticed you weren't taking, you know, demographics. So it's not clear of the information you got, who it came from, but you based your complete street. Policy on it. So that concerns me a little bit. I agree that I would have liked to have, well, actually, what I really would like to be a part of, and obviously it's too late for Friday, but for the next round of prioritization, instead of going directly to the state, it really would be good to run it by us, because we hear from lots of constituents who couldn't necessarily go to your transportation study. So I think it's important that we get to weigh in on that before it gets to the state. Um, One of the things I didn't hear, except maybe it's not low-hanging fruit, are bike lanes, which I never understood, but the bike people still like it, that go and then stop and there's parking and then they continue. I just don't understand how that's safe, because if you're driving, if you're riding a bike and then you come into, you know, four parked cars, is that something that's going to be addressed through this?
Yeah, so you want to have continuous accommodations for bicycles and pedestrians. When it comes to bicycles, there are different options, whether it be bike lanes or share the road pavement markings called shallow pavement markings.
Mm-hmm.
And those are more, share the road pavement markings, more for slower downtown areas. So in areas where you've got a faster moving road, for instance, perhaps you might have a bike lane. As it travels into a more commercial area, perhaps it converts from bike lanes into shallow. It's important to have something, however, because when you're dealing with parked vehicles, the frequent type of accident is the car door opening and taking out a bicyclist. So what these shallow pavement markings do, or even a bicycle lane if you can fit it in that location, is identify where the bicyclist should be relative to that parked vehicle so that they don't get hit when the car door opens on them.
What I'm thinking of is Wells Ave.
Yeah.
And I know we have bike lanes,
yeah,
but then all of a sudden we have parking.
Yeah.
So boom.
Right.
I mean, I don't have
no,
to.
You
but what do you, is that where you do the, it comes into the traffic lane?
Depending on the layout of the lanes as well. If you have an exclusive right turn lane, for instance, you've got to get the bike lane over into the middle so that they continue straight. If you don't have that, and it's this multiple lane approach, it might be a matter of reallocating space within the roadway to have to maintain that bike lane, or even maybe a little bit of box widening, they call it, widening the road slightly, just enough to provide the minimum bicycle lane.
This is all over the city.
Oh, sure.
So
sure,
I don't know if that's a priority or...
Yeah.
And if let me just clarify one thing, because I'm hearing a lot from you, and I hopefully there isn't a misunderstanding that we've taken a combination of a lot of things in our approach. We've taken a combination of what I spoke about earlier with existing plans that we had out there with our bicycle network, with our bicycle plan, existing plans that the city already has, along with feedback that we've received from the transportation strategy, along with feedback from the planning department and DPW. So this is the prioritization plan that we're submitting is not strictly just what we've received back from the transportation strategy.
Right.
It is based upon previous plans that we've had in existence, but we've never, to Ferrer's point, is plan we've had, but we've never acted on and implemented. So we've got those plans. We've got feedback from the transportation strategy events that we've had, which Jim has been at two of those events in conjunction with the transportation strategy. And then with things that we've identified as city staff through problem areas from accidents, vehicle accidents, pedestrian accidents, all the data that we get to the data staff. So this is it's a combination of a lot of different data points and data sets that we've provided to environmental partners. This isn't just about whoever squeaks the loudest saying, I want bike lanes here. So I want to clarify that. That is not what this is about.
There's just too many needs. I mean, if you look at the entire city and say, okay, where are there sidewalks or wheelchair ramps that aren't ADA compliant or missing for that matter?
It adds up quite a bit.
So there's only so much we can do, especially with $400,000.
So when's the next deadline that you have to send the prioritization?
So it's August 15th, which is Friday, and that's July 15th, that's for the 9 months. Project will take 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we were to wait till September, then it's a 6 month window of things that we can get done within 6 months. I want to once again really emphasize to everyone that this is about low cost, high impact. It is very easy projects to accomplish. So to your point, Mark, is this isn't about a major project that we're going to come forth that we might not have a lot of buy-in from the counselors. These are projects we're going after that we suspect most counselors are going to be behind. The no turn on red illumination, APS, accessible pedestrian signals, where
people that are visually impaired or hearing impaired. We don't have a lot of that throughout the city, so we're really targeting significant gaps.
We
with
also
this.
Do like extra time for older people to talk to.
Yeah,
is
so we're looking.
It
could be part of that if
that's
we do
important.
This. So we're looking at all those other settings, but so we're really looking at once again low cost, easy, quick hitters, but that have a high impact. So these aren't really about the projects that are going to that could be controversial projects.
It would
or
be good for us to know it.
Exactly.
If there are 1 to 10, and yep. 10 might be important for us, it would be good to yep. see them before that's submitted to the state. And the only other thing I had was, once you do have the complete streets policy, once you do get some funding, regarding the private, the charging developers, there should be definitely something at ISD, like a seat, encouraging people. I don't know if you may even need a zoning ordinance to encourage including accessible.
Okay.
So
okay.
Just a thought. Okay.
I have in order Vicki, Scott, Farber, and then Mark. I just wanted to note, though, that this actually was included in our materials for the core project.
Yes.
So
good. We took up last night.
Yeah, we took up last night. Yeah,
good.
Transportation really matters. So, Vicki.
Good. Thank you. A number of the points that I had questions on have been discussed. Thank you, Mark, and everybody else. The Complete Streets Working Group, can you just clarify who's on that and what this is?
So we're still in the process of vetting the Complete Streets Working Group out. We have already for the last, I've been with the city now for a year, and I know that this group existed before me. We have a cluster. It's a Complete Streets cluster that meets once a month, and that's composed of a representative from planning, DPW. Right now it's Rachel, Urban Design, James Freese has been on that, Barney's coming to those, Jim McGonigal, myself, Lou Taverna, mm-hmm. Greg Swan, our design engineer, Gloria, our traffic engineer, our transportation director. We've involved Health and Human Services as part of that now as well. To come in, Jeannie Fairley's as part of that as our ADA coordinator for the city. So we've got different representatives from each department within the city. So, and the reason we're doing that is because of the fact that we don't want to run in silos where it's just a project or something where DPW is making all the decisions.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to hear that you set that group together. Are you also including at the table or in some way the stuff that comes out of the TAG group, the transportation advisor group, citizens group?
Yeah,
there are rights people on there, and
the TAG members aren't currently, the TAG group's not part of the Complete Streets Working Group, but we definitely take their input and the conversations and the recommendations that they have into the discussion.
So there's a direct line of communication between that group and and this group.
Yeah.
You know how that goes? Who's
Andrea is the chair for TAG. Right now it comes to me, Gloria Thunder, several members that are on the email chain that attend those TAG meetings and that. And then we're really encouraging the TAG groups as well to become part of the transportation strategy and to come out to the events. For example, the West Newton kickoff meeting that we had 2 weeks ago, we're really trying to get these organizations such as TAG involved in that public input process. So we have several members from the TAG group at the West Newton kickoff meeting. So.
Good. Okay. So, thank you. That's very good to hear. I'm also very glad to hear that we're taking 50,000 and doing a strategy. I think that's a really important document to have. And as Mark says, let's make sure it doesn't sit on the shelf. It needs to be an active document.
It is going to be. Our intent is to have it as a living document. We're going to submit as many projects as we possibly can, knowing that the cap is 400,000. And then if it continues in subsequent years, which we think it will, we're going to be continuously refining that list and that prioritization plan through the next year. And then as councilors bring things to us, there may be, we suspect, will be additional things that come onto that prioritization plan. So we'll submit that yearly
to try to come after.
Okay, no. The last thing is, I think it's a very good idea that since we've got a limited potential for $400,000, that we do quick hit and run things, so to speak. I hate to use that term, but I'm really tough to say that. I'm really tough. In looking at the intersections where we think we can make the most impact with small money, but we've got a couple of roadways that we've done a lot of work on, north, south, and east, west. We had Chapter 90 money, for example, and did a very good complete streets roadway run on Walnut Street a few years ago with Chapter 90 funds, and we've done a number of things along Beacon Street. Are you planning on at some point looking at extending the ability to transverse Newton north, south, and east, west?
Yes.
And extending it to other areas like Manhattan and around Wells Ave, where
Absolutely. We've
got a lot of bikers.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the end, I think the ultimate goal would be to make these connections with adjoining municipalities as well, so that someone could to get onto a bike trail or a bike facility, come into Newton and continue that all the way to Boston, if you will. So, or it's not, you know, we are focusing on Newton, but we're also looking at where are the gaps between other municipalities to us, and how can we make the connection from that in through our network. So, as they're coming from Newton, they can continue on that network in and through Newton.
That's really why the GIS mapping with all color-coded lines and symbols is very effective in identifying where those gaps are and how we continue to
Good. Okay, I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you.
Scott? Just a couple things. on the policy itself, I'm not troubled by the fact that it's somewhat vague right now. I think that, you know, you're in a little bit of a time constraint here, and I get that. It could be modeled it after the DOT template, let's just say, right? However, I think some of my colleagues raised some good points that there should be definitely be an opportunity for the council to weigh in on some specifics, and whether that falls under specifics within the policy, and whether that falls under, you know, the committee, however you want to track it. When my colleagues see working group in a policy, their antennas go straight up, because working groups are usually involved council representation. So it doesn't say that specifically in there, but it says like other organizations within the city, and I was very quick to pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So there definitely will need to be some council representation, whether it's the working group or the committee or whatever it may be. So in terms of the time constraints, I wasn't too troubled by the policy. There are some specifics I'd like to see in there, and specifically I just want to have it on the record, because we're talking about, you know, as we talked about during budget, we're doing Adams Street over, and we're having a lot of conversation right now about removing trees, because they, you know, we have trees that are buckling sidewalks and buckling granite curbing and causing some problems. Okay, so I don't see that specificity in there just yet, and I think that needs to be incorporated so that everybody who looks at the policy can understand very specifically what it is that the city is trying to accomplish. Because we're kind of modeling what we're going to be doing on Adams Street after this complete street policy, but it's in a draft phase. So I appreciate what we're doing. And I think it makes great sense what we're doing on Adams Street, but I don't know if everybody would actually buy in, you know, and I think that they should, because we're trying to make sure we're not throwing good money after bad. So I wanted to incorporate and be very clear about, like, an issue like trees and what we're doing. In what we're doing on Adams Street, we're talking about, as I mentioned, removing a number of healthy trees to get the street done the right way, but however, we're replacing every tree, and we're actually replacing more trees than
than we're taking out, which is a good thing. Should that be part of the policy? Do you know what I mean? So there are things like that I think we really need to talk about, because I like what we're doing there, but I also like the fact that we're going above and beyond, and maybe that's a parameter that needs to be in our policy. So I'll just throw that up there on the policy piece. So, and I mentioned the piece about the I understand it's a cluster right now, but I really think that, to be fair to my colleagues, when they see working group, the antennas go up. So I want some representation, and we can certainly take that up with the executive office, because there needs to be council representation. I likened the prioritization. I probably wouldn't have chosen prioritization as my term. I think when my colleagues and I hear prioritization, we think there's 50 projects on a CIP, and now you're cherry-picking projects off the CIP, and you may be jumping something that would be the very important in our particular wards, or maybe was low funding, or maybe was high risk. So I can appreciate how they're thinking about it, but I likened it to like the federal ARRA program. It had to be shovel ready. Mm-hmm. You had to be ready to go. We did, I don't know if anybody remembers here, we did Stearns and Pellegrini portions of those projects when the federal ARRA money came out. And I know some people said, well, how did they get the money to do that? They were shovel ready, they were designed, they were ready to go. We locked out on CPA, but they were already designed. So the executive office took the design and just put it in. It definitely wasn't a priority. However, it was ready to go. So I understand that, but I you know, that's what I'm saying, prioritization, I understand how you clarify it. So
and I will say also, President, that the prioritization plan is not our terminology. Prioritization plan is MassDOT's terminology.
I just wanted colleagues to understand that it wasn't an issue of running through the CIP and taking things out that might be low-hanging fruit that are important to a lot of folks. We have a lot of input into the CIP. So the last point I wanted to make was, and I may have said this, but I want to make sure that there's the ability for counselors to amend the policy. Like, I talked about this recently, but I really think, as I see, you know, Vicki here highlighting every other sentence, I would have said that while she was there, but I'm just being funny. Mark said a lot of notes. We all have a lot of notes with regard to the specifics in there, so there needs to be an opportunity for counselors to have input into this living document policy going forward. It's inevitable, because if not, I can tell you, you're probably not going to get a lot of buy-in around the table. You know, the old Bill Parcells, you know, you want me to be able to cook the meal, but you're not letting me buy some of the groceries. So that will play in here.
So a couple things I'd like to say in response to that, if I may, is one thing about this being vague is, and Jim can elaborate on this, but once we adopt the policy, at least for the Complete Streets grant funding, whatever we place in this policy, we have to carry through, and it's MassDOT's expectation that we carry this through on every project that we do. So there is a little bit of vagueness in this policy for a reason, because we don't want to tie ourselves into a box, and then in future years, we can't do something for a various reason, but then MassDOT's saying, wait a minute, you have this policy in place. So that's why some of this is vague, as you see. But then the second thing is, I would say, is as we're working towards the ultimate goal, which is the docketed item from Chairman Laredo, is the Complete Streets or the roads program and policy, this is just a portion of that. So this isn't the policy, the roads program policy, in and of itself. This is just a portion of that. And this is always up for tweaking, and I suspect that as we move through, we're going to continue to tweak this, especially with new federal policies that come in place and requirements such as NICI permitting, stormwater permitting. This is going to be a living document. At this point, this is really about getting the policy in place and adopting it to get the grant funding, but then this will be also be a living document, just like that prioritization plan will be, because we're going to have to constantly tweak it and add things in as regulations change and as we come
back. So can I just ask Hank to clarify, the policy goes in when? When does the policy have to be filed?
So the policy will be submitted along with the prioritization.
On Friday. Right.
On Friday, okay. That's correct.
And then by doing that, and MassDOT gives its blessing, then as part of that, we establish this committee / working group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would hope that, you know, however we decide to do it on our level, I'm sure we'll talk to the mayor, whether it's through the chair here, or whether, you know, Council Laredo sat on the roads working group, if that's going to now sort of be incorporated. I just want the ability to kind of streamline thoughts and what we want, get it in here. I understand you need to file it. I get it. These folks need to have some input into it, so.
And I would suggest to the committee that this was in Friday's packet, but this has been in at least two different Friday packets for the entire board. And I understand that typically the committee only looks at what's relevant to you, but this went to public safety over a month ago, and this was in a Friday packet. So with all due respect to this committee, this has been before the entire board for over a month, month and a half. So we do still want your input, and I'm not negating that, but I just would like it clear that we have had this in front of the entire board for the Friday packet. But what I would suggest is if you're taking notes tonight or there's things that you would like to see us incorporate, please feel free to email Rachel Blatt and copy me, and we will take a look at it. We will do our best to incorporate those things that and try to get, as Commissioner McGonigal says, we always want to get the yes within a reason. So we're more than willing to take those comments and incorporate them.
I just wanted to, on this matter, and Susan had something on this matter, when you're talking about how you're going to use this policy, and I understand that it's for DOT, it needs to reflect their policy, but folks are talking about wanting more specifics. I think of a document like this as a little different from the specific, say, roadway standards. And, you know, I agree that we need to have a stand. I've been hearing about this project and hearing about the trees, you know. And, you know, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine for a long time. Sal and I used to talk about it a lot. Like, what is the best way to construct a roadway, and what is the standard you should have for the sidewalk versus the curb, the berm, the size of the berm, the distance of things, the whole, from the entire public way. What are the standards we should have? So when I heard about, that's a great example, Adams Road, yes, the trees are buckling the sidewalk. There's no way to have a reasonable and accessible sidewalk unless you take out the trees. But, you know, what did you do at that point? Did you just replace everything the way it was, but with different trees, and reconstruct everything the way it was? Or did you have, our berms are so ridiculously narrow, for any kind of tree, really, should we only have trees on one side, have a bigger berm in a different roadway section? You know, are sidewalks the right size? You know, all that stuff.
I agree with that. No, I think we may have to learn from Adams Street, though, on that.
But, you know, I'm so glad you're doing this work, but I just wanted to say, with respect to what this needs to be and what our input maybe wants to be in terms of the language in here and so forth, maybe there's a separate document that's about standards.
And I will tell you, that is absolutely what we're working on with DPW, because we agree. It's something that I've seen in the year that I've been here, where it's one set of standards for this roadway, but it's a different set of standards for this one.
Yeah.
It's what we're continuously hearing from the counselors, and in the end, this is really what I think that Mark was trying to accomplish when he was on the working group, when former Commissioner Tarosi was here, is to really get a road policy together to say, when we do a project, we are going to do it like this, and it's going to meet this standard, recognizing that there's sometimes we might not be able to do that because of the constraints of the roadway. But what I would say is that is a completely different policy or document than what this is here. Because that's really about the standards and looking at the trees and making sure that we are doing things by best management practices for today's standards.
But the policy can reference the standards.
Exactly.
And the standards are an addendum that you go into to talk about trees or this.
And I really see this being a supplement to whatever we develop for our roads program policy.
This is just a supplement to that policy, or a supporting document.
Susan, Barbara, Scott, you want that?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
And Mark. I just wanted to, something
you said maybe want to say that we are not immune from the need for education. I mean, because they're roads and sidewalks and we all use them every day, we think we're experts. We are not experts, and we need to be educated about this policy. Mm-hmm. So please come to us with that information as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, Barbara?
Thank you. So I stepped out for a second, so I apologize. But it seems to me that one of the issues is that I thought I was coming here tonight to hear more about that road standard idea, and then we're talking more about this policy. So let's say there's no money up for grabs. Let's say that's done. There's no money. You still want to have a policy,
yeah.
Right? I mean, even if you don't have to write Matthew P. standards, you want to have a policy. So my question is, separate from, and I know we have the CIP, but separate from this plan that's going to speak for those things we can do quickly and the biggest bang for the are we also going to have an internal working list of things that we actually want done, even if it's something very complicated and very expensive? You know what I'm saying? Because I think there's two separate. I understand what you guys are talking about and thinking, and it's absolute sense for this particular thing. But separately, I feel like there's got to be a way to push forward, for instance, Washington Street Corridor. They've been talking about that for years and years. But it's saving its budget, so nothing happens.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous. The fact you can't ride your bike from West Newton to Newtondale is ridiculous, right?
What I really see this going is which you've heard Commissioner McDonald will say several times, and you continue to hear me say, is we really expect a lot of those things to come out at any transportation strategy this fall, late this fall, early winter, as that comes.
And then we're going to find money for that
Exactly, because some of those are going to be capital projects, because this strategy is really going to be, the best way I can tie it to would be very similar to the Newton Center parking strategy, where at the end, there's going to be a set of recommendations that come. This is your current state of affairs. This is what we recommend the city do as you move forward with transportation decisions. A menu of choices. Doesn't mean we're going to implement everything they come and do everything they recommend, but we're going to do some of the recommendations. But I see that the complete streets policy, this document, the roads program policy, all of this is going to be tied together. What this is really doing, this policy that's before you tonight, this is really formalizing something that each department, I think, has been trying to accomplish for several years, but hasn't successfully accomplished it. So this policy is really the beginning framework to force the different departments to work together, to communicate, to plan things out, to execute together, as opposed to planning running in the silo and then saying, here's a project we worked on for 2 years, Commissioner DPW, go and make it happen. So this is really forcing us to break out of those silos and do these things. But I really do see all of this coming in the end back to that transportation strategy that's late fall, early winter.
Mark?
So a few things. I really agree with what President Lennon said about how we do this. I appreciate we're going to have a big transportation strategy. I read the Newton Center parking study. I'm not sure that's where we want to be going for a comparison. I'll leave that aside. But I look at it very practically, and I love what you're doing on Adams Street for exactly the reason. It's thinking about very concretely looking from the edges inward. Take out a street tree. If the street tree is cracking the sidewalk and it's making the sidewalk impassable, take the street tree out, put a new tree in, and do it better. Same with the bike lane. I'll tell you, I love that we're painting bike lanes all over the city. I said this the other night at land use. Great. Crappy solution, to be very blunt, okay? The better solution is a truly dedicated bike lane. Article in the Globe 2 days ago about that from the President of City Council, which is actually safe. Okay, what we're building is not safe. It sounds great, and it's not safe. And so I really want us in these policies to think about that. I would add that it's not just bike lanes or sidewalks, but it's utilities. It's where stormwater drains. It's lighting. It's plantings on the berms. I probably wrote down 3 or 4 other things that go along with it, utility poles or the lack thereof. I mean, that to me is what I will be looking for from your policy, for really concrete ideas of how we do that. And I think if we do that, then we're going to actually do something. And coupled with, I'll add, kind of bigger visions of how do we create a clear bike path from the Needham border and beyond to the Brookline border. How can somebody safely, and I emphasize safely, utilize a bike? How do we get transportation through so we're not sitting behind some cyclists going 6 miles an hour and backing up traffic? But these are competing issues.
Absolutely.
And I guess I'm adding a lot here. You can sense some frustration, and not with you, but with the work they're doing, but generally. But that's how I think we need to be thinking, and that's what I want to see in these reports, so that when we do a street, when you do the next Adams Street, you take those principles in mind, and everybody follows them. And that, to me, is what we need to accomplish. So.
Chris?
Well,
like
I
said, I appreciate the fact that it's general, okay, because I would hate for us to go looking for state funds for our next whatever, and you know, there's something that we didn't adhere specifically to in the complete streets because we can't, depending on the neighborhood. So I would hate for it to hurt us in the long run. So I'm all for general. Other than that, working group, and
Project. You're looking at the entire city, which is exactly what we need to be doing. And it's about planning for all the different modes of transportation. It's about standards. You need to have a policy. You're trying to lead the way so that the private sector follows what we do. And this is a bare beginning, you know, with all of that. I know we're going to get another preview of the related matter of the condition of our streets, and a prioritization plan for redoing our streets that is going to be based on new data, and we're supposed to see that, I believe, very soon, like maybe at our August meeting. Because you're going to be using that to build the CIP for the next year.
Okay. We may not have everybody here. I'm sure a lot of colleagues.
Yeah, we'll do it at the first meeting. That's fine.
If you have the report beforehand.
Right. I don't really want to be here anyway.
It may not be, but I'm just letting you know. I just think that they need
right.
interest.
So the first September meeting, but I know we're getting that preview. I know you have the data, and that's part of this too. So it's really a huge undertaking. And of course, I know the city is also trying to look at it with respect to the vertical built environment as well. So it's huge, and to the extent that some of us are impatient, I think
some folks have been talking about this for decades.
I understand.
Yeah. But I appreciate that you're wrapping your heads around it.
And really, I appreciate the feedback from the whole committee. So please let me know. I really do appreciate the feedback, and I believe that this committee is going to be the advocate for us going forward, because to Mark's point with the bike lanes, you know, if we do this, what you suggest, Mark, with putting in protective bike lanes, that means in many cases removing parking in a substantial amount of parking.
Right.
So that's a tough decision that the counselors are going to have to make.
Yeah.
I don't want to
make
that decision. So,
you know, so
these are the conversations. Absolutely. But what I'm really saying is, this isn't something that, you know, these DPW can come together with projects that are the best intent, with the best intent, but in the end, the counselors are going to be the ones that are going to have to make the tough decisions as well.
And you're not going to see dedicated bike lanes all throughout
the exactly. Yeah.
Or Cambridge.
Exactly.
They
have
a lot of them now. Yeah, they do, but they're not dedicated.
Yeah, they're a bunch.
And this is really about, we talk a lot about
balance.
We talk a lot about balance, and that's what this is really about.
Be able to
this is about balance and finding balance between all those nodes. And really trying to get away from the car versus the bike. Because the current state of the environment is really, it's either cars or bikes. Well, what about all the other in-betweens? And what I would offer to everybody is that, for most of us, every day we become several different nodes of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive a car, as soon as you get out of that car and you walk, you're a pedestrian. So some people will drive, bike, and then walk. So most people use several different modes of transportation every day, and that's what we have to really balance as a whole here in the city.
Yes, sir. And we need a new commuter rail. All right, folks, I think we're going to hold this item. Do I have a motion to hold? Mark is or whoever, someone has motion to hold, all in favor of holding. I have to do one more thing with the committee because
they're going
to
hold the
next
day.
Thank you very much. We're putting up one up.
We have
and I think it's time to have a dedicated lane for people walking.
No, I'm going to that lane. That's a green lane.
No.
Folks, I really need to do this. I need to tell you a little story. This is item number 255-16. Are we all here?
Yeah, what's the story?
Oh my God.
I think this is about the Commissioner of Public Buildings is asking for 558 waiver for the relocation of modular classrooms, the four that came from Zervis, and specifically to locate them at Brown and South. Now, as you recall, we were supposed to have a meeting on the funding for this on Monday. Monday afternoon, I got a call from Lenny, who had canceled his meeting, so of course I canceled ours. No purpose meeting on funding if we're not with finance. The reason he did that is that EPA had been requesting information about the how the programming decision was made to choose to put these modulars at South and at Brown, and he had gotten no information. And none of us had been given any information. No one had information in the packet. We were asked to waive the 558 process
for time purposes. For time.
Right, and we will probably eventually do that because these modulars already have been engineered. There's already drawings, even in the packet. It's been engineered in terms of utility connections and foundations and so on and so forth. They're pretty new. We're still paying the bond off on them.
Okay. They have been moving.
They have been taken from the Zerba site, because they had to be moved from the Zerba site and put temporarily aside by ground. We thought that Lenny thought that they had also been divided and the other two been moved over to their site up south. That did in fact not happen.
Okay.
So they have to just store where the school department would like to have two of them. Okay. So there, the long story short of it is, or the short story long of it, or whatever you say, is that
There seems to have been a tremendous disconnect also in the communication between the administration and the school department. Because when I called, after I talked to Lenny on Monday, I called Josh, and I tell you, not discussing this tonight substantively has cost me a day's worth of phone calls. And Josh, and you know, was on the phone with Matt Hills and Josh and Lenny and back to Josh. And what Matt Hills told me just today is that Mike Cronin is apoplectic about not having these decisions in time to have these installed at Brown for September because there will be children. And when he didn't say this to Josh, Josh and Maureen had a conversation and told me that this is not an open situation. I hear today that, according to Matt, that there will be children without classrooms at Brown. At Brown is the most critical site.
Then why didn't they get it to us before?
Exactly.
Next summer.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know that Lenny had been asking for this docket item for some time.
Well, the funding docket item wasn't docketed until May, right? I mean, if you look at the docket,
yeah.
The funding item was docketed in
May.
The waiver was just docketed on July 6th.
Yes.
And, you know, quite frankly, we've had this conversation, but it's very frustrating to try to be scheduling special meetings and extra meetings and trying to think about options on the fly all the time. And, you know, we tried to talk to them about this across the hall and with the school committee, and
This is not a problem in the buildings department, or of course the school committee department does not docket items before. They made a decision and they have their reasoning. I don't know what the story is, because I don't know who, Malin is not here, who he asked for information, from whom he did not get information about how these decisions were made.
In fairness, Amy had emailed us, I think, last week, too,
yes.
When we had the waiver for the 5-8 on the docket, right? It was on the docket,
and she said,
why did it go to programs and services, too?
Right.
If it's a decision that's
exactly.
being made, you know, in my understanding at the time was that this decision had been vetted about where it should be. And so if you remember the other night, she made a request.
Yeah.
That it go to the third committee. I was fine with that. And I said, and I called it up and also said, look, just because it's going to programs and services too doesn't mean that we might not try to still have a committee of the whole. That's all three committees, you know, so we'll all get the same information. But there's got to be a better way, and we're just not getting it done.
Well, the reason we did not have that meeting on Monday is because Lenny was pissed and canceled.
Not because it was already been moved before
any of this has happened.
And at the same time, there's also a concern that I believe Ward 4 and the mayor's office has heard about crowding at Franklin. So they're saying, well, who made the decision to take these here? Or whatever, I apologize.
No.
But to put these here and while they've been asked to be cited here, but apparently the short answer, there's a more involved answer, but one of the shorter answers was, well, it's at Franklin by buffer zone movement, and that's not sitting well with some folks in the Franklin community. I thought the chair brought up a good point about, and Susan, you've mentioned this a number of times, the number of modules we have as a whole, these are newer.
We've always talked about.
Right, but so it's like we're at this peak to get this done for September.
When I said that,
we don't have the bigger picture.
You know?
And I can't schedule a bigger picture discussion for August. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair, quite frankly.
Right.
So.
Well, we're going to have to rush through.
We don't know that. We've got one saying it is, and Josh is saying.
Well, he's going to probably change his tune at this point, but I want to say one thing to you all, because one of the reasons we get all these late filed docket items is that the chairs of the different departments, the commissioners of the different departments,
If they can't write a docket item and send it in by themselves, they've got to funnel everything through the chief of staff.
But just in fairness, that wasn't much different under the previous administration, too. We used to get a docket item.
Yeah.
You know, what you would see is a docket item from the department head writing Sandy Poole, and then there'd be this two-sentence letter on top of it that says, I'm asking that you docket. It's like, why do we need that? You know what I mean? To docket it.
But we don't get to see it at all.
No, I understand, but I'm just saying that. So that didn't really come into play here. I remember that from previous administrations. I don't know if
and I remember it being better. I remember it when Bob Moody was here. He, because he had been on the other end of it and been before it, he knew when to, and I think that there needs to be someone in the administration who understands our process. And
But that's why I wanted to talk to the committee chairs. Deb Crossley scheduled her meetings in May and June with the understanding that we may not be here in July and August. And every other chair does that too.
Right.
So you can't come in at the last minute and say, we need to talk about this, right? It's like we've done our best to try to plan this a little bit. Now, in fairness, from what I understood, in terms of the money item, there was an understanding through the administration that the waiver could have been requested under the money item. And Dave Wilkinson brought it to someone's attention to say it's a separate docket item, separate vote. You need to do that, hence the separate docket item for the 558 waiver.
Yeah.
All of
that. Why isn't that not understood?
I don't know. That's my point.
It's been
frustrating a couple days. It should be understood from
Dave's
point
of view. So, I don't know if we're going to do this, but where Scott and I left it is that when you're going away next week, and you're going to schedule a meeting for the week that you're back, you're going to try and do that.
So what I was, yes.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, I expressed some frustration to the mayor's office today. Mm-hmm. He called me late in the day, like before I got here late. He called me very late and said that he and Maureen were interviewing with the school department to find out what was happening, and he would be back to me in the next 2 days. So, while yes, I just want to hear what those conversations are. So,
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
You know, if there was overcrowding around, we should have heard about it,
right,
months ago.
Well, in fairness, and again, I know I'm kind of saying this on the record, but I don't have all this information. Josh had said that just a couple months ago, they were talking about moving kids from Oak Hill to Brown because there was space.
Okay.
And now we're trying to put them on. So it's kind of like, I don't know how long, but Josh said, his quote was not too long.
Right.
But my point is, we need to know this sort of big picture. And I don't know how successful a request for a waiver would have been if folks have these bigger picture questions and they say, well, I'm not going to vote on anything until I understand what the big picture is. So we're in a little bit of a bind here, but my concern is I don't want to come back once again being like, oh, the council was the one that held it all up, they're at fault. I am extremely frustrated by that. So
thanks. So that's why we're not discussing this item tonight.
It seems to be a reaction.
I want people to have an idea.
No, it's important. I had heard that they were already moved. And then I heard that they were moved, but they haven't been
moved. All in favor of hold?
No, definitely.
That's what I had.
They're the word at Brown. When it's not there, you need to sign them like that.
I've given you a motion for that.
Yes, I know.
I have a motion to hold, so thank you.
It's unanimous that we are going to hold this item. Thank you. Have a good night, folks. And by the way, I'm going to